It's time for Windows Weekly, the last show of 2022. Paul Theriot is here and his special guest, Richard Campbell from Runaz Radio and .NET Rocks. Richard has lots to say about the year gone by and Microsoft and history. And, of course, he's going to have some brown liquor recommendations towards the end of the show. Paul's got a cocktail, too. It's going to be a great Windows Weekly to wrap up the year. Stay here. Windows Weekly is next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot, episode 808, recorded Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. Nuclear conservation. Windows Weekly is brought to you by MIMO monitors and their award-winning small format displays, touchscreens, and tablets. And don't forget to try Unify for all your video conferencing needs. Visit unifymeeting.com and enter the code WW50 for 50% off a year's subscription, or use the code WW by itself to get 25% off any of MIMO's displays. Limited time offer. Thanks for listening to this show. As an ad-supported network, we are always looking for new partners with products and services that will benefit our qualified audience. Are you ready to grow your business? Reach out to advertise at twit.tv and launch your campaign now. It's time for Windows Weekly. Hello, dozers and winners. The last show of 2022. And we are going to celebrate. Paul Theriot is here, Theriot.com. Hello, Paulie.
Hello, Leo.
Little Paulie Walnuts. Wouldn't wear the sweater.
Look at it. You can tell that's not going to fit on my body. What am I, a sausage?
Well,
I can't put that thing on.
I stuffed myself into mine.
Look, I'm sorry. I'm uncomfortable as it is. I gotta pick my battles.
All right. Well, I spent $82 on this son of a bitch, so I'm gonna wear it. You got yours for free. You could burn it for all I care.
Yep.
Micah bought one too. Micah Sargent bought one. That's how much of a Windows fan he is. And then he said he was disappointed because it's acrylic.
Wow.
That sucks.
I mean, the good news is it burns spectacular.
Who's that? That's a voice I hear that I know. That sounds so much like the guy on Runaz Radio and .NET. Is that Richard Campbell?
Well, hello.
Hello. It's the dulcet tones of Mr. Richard Campbell from Runaz Radio.
Hi.
We're so glad to have you.
Yeah, it's really good to see you. I mean, last time I saw you, I think we were on a cruise ship.
Oh, and I had COVID.
Yeah, lucky you.
I had to stay well away from everybody.
Of the way we used to be.
I don't know when I got COVID. And I didn't know for sure it was COVID till later because we didn't have any tests. And I found out when I got home. Yeah, I didn't want to go to the ship's doctor because I thought he's gonna throw me over.
Oh, I wasn't sick. My wife asked me to get tested because of our daughter.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, because she had to go back to school. And I'm like, I feel fine. She's like, just do it. And I was like, oh, I'm positive.
Well, somehow. I feel bad. I hope nobody got sick on that cruise. You didn't, right, Richard?
I wasn't sick.
My wife got it.
Oh, she did.
I shared a bed, but I never tested positive for the whole thing.
I heard that somebody told me about 60 people on that entire ship of 3,000 or 4,000.
But I don't think it was. It wasn't really bad for most people, right?
And it was very mild because everybody was vaccinated.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it was I only had a sore throat. Lisa was sicker. She lost her sense of taste and smell, which is pretty bad.
Oh, that's not good.
And it didn't come back for like 3 months. No. And she's still tired, but I think she's mostly tired of me, to be honest.
Yeah.
To be frank, maybe if I were frank, she wouldn't be tired of me. But no, I'm Leo, and we are going to talk about Windows. It's the year ender.
Yep.
Do you have planned anything, Paul, like a summary of all the best Microsoft stories of the year?
I don't know best, but these are the I'm going to call them from my perspective the kind of some of the top stories, top Microsoft stories of good, bad, and different.
Richard, I'm going to make a special lower third that incorporates both of you because it's a double box. I like to put the location. Where are you located? Are you in Vancouver, British Columbia?
That is correct.
All right. So I'm going to add that. You guys talk amongst yourselves. Mm-hmm. This takes a little bit of effort.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's clever stuff.
Yes. Obviously.
Yes, it is. First,
the top story.
Yes. What's the
from my perspective?
Story? Windows 11. Yes.
Was Microsoft's incredibly successful acquisition of Activision Blizzard, which went off without a hitch. And I'm so glad to finally have Call of Duty on Game Pass. Somebody please kill me.
What do you think? What do you think the over under is on this actually ever happening at this point?
Look, I think this is what the news feed's like now. You read a story that says, oh, it's doomed. It's never going to happen. The next one says FTC has no case whatsoever. This thing's going to get thrown out immediately. So I don't know. I mean, I've always felt that they should be able to acquire this company. I don't feel that it changes the competitive landscape in the slightest, especially when you consider the concessions they will have to make and now literally will have to make to Sony in particular. So
I think it's done an incredibly good job of making it look like a big deal.
Yes, I know.
With it's like actually being a big deal.
It's like, hey, Microsoft's like, hey, we're buying Activision Blizzard. Here's why. And Sony says, yeah, but what about this other thing over here that we care about? Yeah, don't worry. We're not going to do anything about that. Well, you know, and every regulatory body in the world is listening to them. It's it's very interesting. So,
well, in Europe, it does seem to always be the whiny party is the one that gets the whiny party is the one that gets the legislation.
Well, now that you've outed my political affiliation, let me just say
you're in the wino party. It's a different party. You're in the rosé party.
It's the same party, Leo. I think it was Leo who brought up maybe a week or two ago that the way this will fall apart, if it does, is because it just takes too long. And that it's going to be a buyer's remorse issue. A year will go by, 18 months, whatever the time frame. And Microsoft's going to say, you know what? $69 billion is not looking so good anymore.
They could push back on that. And it's also about how much money is around. Because the Amy Hood's been really tight with cash this year.
Yeah.
There's a big case for pushing back on that.
Yeah.
And Bobby Kotick's gone nowhere.
This was all his idea. He said, I'm going to get the hell out of Dodge before I, get sued.
That's right.
He was dumping it. But yeah, I wonder. So yeah, maybe they could lower the price. This could be a material adverse event in the sense that Microsoft might have to shed some, I'm using big words, might have to shed some of the assets of, Activision in order to do the acquisition. I see this happen. You know, like if you wanted to buy a TV station in a mid-sized market, let's say Lower Macungie Township, Pennsylvania.
Yep. Well, that's kind of a big market. But yes, go on.
You might have to divest yourself of a newspaper or two or a radio station.
Yes. What is this? What century is this story from? The oil barons of the 1920s. What are you talking about? Radio stations?
Yeah, I don't know.
TV stations? Newspapers? What the hell is this?
It used to be In the old days, they would do that. In this case, it's a question. The FTC's complaint, which I did finally read, seems to be entirely about the idea that Microsoft might keep not just Call of Duty, but things like World of Warcraft from as exclusives.
Sony does that. Sony does it like crazy.
Company with the richest history of keeping their games off of other platforms and denying crossplay between platforms is complaining that Microsoft, they might do something bad. You never know.
So
we've been doing our best to try and teach them how to.
The immediate impact, of course, is it delays this at least till August of next year. That's when the administrative judge will rule. He could throw it out. The administrative judge.
Sure.
It's unlikely because they usually just go along with the FTC, but he could throw it out. And if he doesn't throw it out, then they'll appeal to the actual courts. But that's going to take months again. I mean, it could be years.
How much appetite
for delay does Microsoft have?
I don't think it does. I don't think it exists.
Turn around and buy EA instead.
Jeez. Well, okay. By the way, there's precedent for that because remember Microsoft wanted to buy DoubleClick and then they picked up a company no one had ever heard of instead.
Overture?
What's the distant number two in this market?
Yeah. Which they wrote off as a $6 billion loss later, right?
What was that company? It wasn't Overture. It was.
Oh, wasn't? Oh, okay.
I can't remember the name.
It wasn't a good buy. It also reminds me of when they bid $21 billion for Yahoo.
Sure.
And lost that bid and then went, whew, that was a close one. Whew.
Well, yeah. So, right. I mean, in Activision's favor, they are coming off of a blockbuster year with the new Call of Duty, which has done incredibly well. Maybe I'm not saying it's going to be worth more in a year, but I don't know. I don't know that it's. I don't know. I just don't know.
So, is it over? Is the question? I guess
we don't know. That's the thing. Microsoft wanted to conclude this within its fiscal year that ends at the end of June next year. August is only a couple of extra months. And by the way, the FTC of the United States is not the only regulatory agency they need to. Aquantive, Patrick Delahunty says it was the ad company. Aquantive.
Yeah, Aquantive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. They have to deal with Europe. They have to deal with South Korea. They have to deal with China, by the way. Brazil said yes, and I don't understand how that's not the precedent. But don't we always do what Brazil says?
Obviously. And there's win points for all of this for Microsoft, too, right? Because all of these games, especially things like World of Warcraft, there's various complaints by different government entities about how they lock in children, how they do upselling, and so forth.
Sure.
There's a concession game play to be made.
Oh, interesting.
To get them on board.
You could say no more loot boxes.
Yeah.
Diablo Immortal is the most appallingly. Yeah. That's their mobile version of Diablo.
They should just call it Loot Box 2022.
You can't, people can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, and their fans booed the game when they announced it, right? Like, that's at their conference. That's impressive. Like, how much
you're gonna try hard
your own market.
You know what? I play it. I love it because I don't care if I don't get, the silver armor and all that crap. It's still the game, Diablo. And then, of course, Diablo 4 is coming out, and that is going to be a hot title, I think. So there's a lot. There's money ahead. Is Bobby Kotick gone, or was he waiting?
No, he's still there. Yeah, no, he's waiting for this.
God. He's waiting for his golden parachute.
Yeah,
right? What's my
parachute
going to look like?
That's right.
Yep, he's waiting for immunity. Is what he's waiting for, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, the lawsuits will continue apace.
Yeah,
it's I kind of applaud Lena Khan. Her notion that we shouldn't let these companies get so big. But this to me seems like the wrong case to pursue. I don't know.
Right.
The argument is that Microsoft is the kinder, gentler tech giant. Like when you've got a toxic culture, Microsoft's worked really hard at being the positive culture. And so it's like, hey, we can inoculate this toxic bro culture with our goodness and maybe everything will be better.
I mean, we know that's a lie,
I was going to say so one of the other stories involves, Bill Gates and Alex Kipman, and you could, it's like the old Daily Show joke. There was a joke interview with Helmut Kohl, who at the time was the Chancellor of Germany, and it said, you're going after a religious group again, which was Scientology. I mean, isn't that a little weird giving your history? And he said, Greg, it's like riding a bike. And, the idea was like, who has more experience?
Holy cow. Persecuting religious minorities. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Holy cow.
Well, I mean, Microsoft could say, look, we have a rich history here. And we are right now literally doing the right thing about that.
That's true. You could say, spin it that way. We know how to take care of this now. Now's the time. We're just going to sweep it all clean.
Well, and Kipman's gone, and Gates has been put in a box by all accounts. Microsoft is trying to do to do the right thing in theory.
Yeah,
right. And Bobby Kotick is still there.
Like a tick.
Like a tick. The other thing we spent a lot of time talking about in 2022 was Microsoft Teams. Mm-hmm. Microsoft was very good at keeping Teams in the headlines by dribbling out features no one wanted.
And also features that people did want. But I think the central thing about Teams is that when you look at Microsoft's history and the creation of platforms, Windows, obviously, Windows Server, obviously, Azure now, Office back in the day, these are platforms. I mean, Teams is Microsoft's most recent platform, and it's hugely successful. It's it has an app engine and an app store and an app economy. And,
well, I would argue the best measure of Teams is successful. There's now a phishing strike based on Teams links. So the bad nice. Guys are now making emails that look like right. teams have totally forgotten.
We did it. Hackers are targeting teams. Oh. We win.
Well, you know you've exactly. made it, right?
Yeah, once exactly.
You, now
exactly.
you're now an attack vector for malware. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Teams is unwieldy. I wish I'd liked it more only because it would be an infinite supply of things to write about. It is every month there are dozens and dozens now of new features that are added to Teams. It's insane. And, you know, it's 5 years old. It started with, you know, very humbly, right? As and actually Bill Gates played a role in this. Remember, there was a debate internally. Do we just buy Slack or do we create our own?
And
Gates said, we have everything we need here. Just do it, you know? And
what I really appreciate about Teams is I have 8 cores and I like to have at least one of them occupied all the time. And Teams
nice.
Does that.
It's nice when you see that well, so the thermometer all the way right. up to the top every once in a while.
Richard, obviously a Microsoft guy. You're on camera like this all the time. So you use Zoom, you use Teams, you use whatever
Lots
else.
Of Teams.
How do you feel about Teams?
Yeah, you know.
that pause
the
was beautiful.
The fun part is. Way. So the term I use these days is tenantitis.
Yeah.
It's not that it's just that the software is bad. It's that the authentication strategy is horrifying. Yeah. So the biggest question you have when I'm running Teams is, who am I?
Yep. That's right.
It's just hard to tell.
What does that mean? Right? Who am I? What do you mean?
What
you
am know? I?
What is this existential crisis?
There, it's like so an sometimes MST I skin. Get invites to Teams that the only way to actually access that invite is the web client.
Okay.
Like if I actually load
because that way you can sign in with something else or whatever. Yeah.
But although it just automatically signs in, like it doesn't tell me anything. It just goes, oh, this will work. The client won't work at all. But sometimes if you open it up in a browser, maybe I have to force it to Brave or force it to Chrome to do that. But that will work. But
I think there was a little bit of a rush to get this thing out the door where if they were a little more thoughtful about it, they could have more easily pulled in things like your Skype history and contacts and kind of just made that just work. And that's the way software should be, right? It should just be seamless and just kind of work.
That history of abandoning VoIP stacks at Microsoft is storied and diverse.
Yes. Yep. That's right. That's right. No, that's absolutely right.
I miss you, Link. Actually, I don't.
I don't even remember.
I miss you, Link. MSN Messenger. Wow. I mean, listen. Or Windows Messenger back in the day, then Windows Live Messenger and whatever. But Brad and I do a Teams call every morning at 9. So 5 days a week. And I would say at least 3 days every week, one of us has a Teams induced problem that is some audio video device not correctly configured, despite the fact that no one has changed anything on their computers. We use this stuff every day. And I'm not an expert, but I don't understand why there isn't a software control that says, listen, if this device is connected, always use it. Always, always, always. And that's one thing, by the way, that Zoom does very, very well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the Microsoft space are freaked out a little bit because the pandemic happened at a time when Microsoft had basically ignored and abandoned Skype, right, in favor of Teams pushing it forward. And, Zoom got ahead because Microsoft was, you know, not on the ball. I think Zoom did a good job. They allow people to create meetings without just, you know, setting up an account. You know, they let people just get on and use it. And
it ran amok, but if it hadn't run amok, it never would have succeeded. Like you got to let the puppy run, but sometimes the puppy barfs. Like that's sort of God. Reality.
Yep. Yep.
Is there a puppy pad for VoIP solutions? you're saying you do Ring Zero on Teams, not on something else? You and Brad. What is this?
I'm sorry. Sorry. First Ring Daily.
Yeah. Ring Zero.
We use Teams, which is why the quality is so terrible. But
somebody said that, Paul always has trouble with his audio. And I thought, it must be normal thing with Zoom.
Paul.
But it's not. It's Teams. Okay.
No, the big thing is my video quality. In fact, I just got a detailed email from someone who says, I don't know why you look blue and Brad looks normal. And I said, it's because Brad's recording it with Teams. You know, and I
sent him a picture here actually too.
Well, okay, but the video quality you see here is 100 times better than what it looks like on that show.
Yeah,
and I'm dumbing down this thing. This is a 4K camera. I'm probably just doing 720p or whatever here. But
to be fair, Teams isn't designed to do podcasts. I mean, it's
no. Why would it be able to record two people talking for 10 minutes?
Well, I have to say, that's Zoom. We've tried them all. Zoom ends up being the best choice for us,
right?
For video.
I think that's the important.
Do you use Zoom, Richard, for your shows?
Sometimes I use Teams, but I don't record video. And there was the Skype NDI version right at the moment.
We used that for a while.
Right. And that was pretty cool until the biggest issue is the guest, right? And so
You can't tell what
when I said Skype and the guy and the folks are like, "What's Skype?" Okay, right. Then you got to move on.
That's why Zoom has been good, actually.
Everybody knows what it is.
With all due respect to Teams, everybody knows what Zoom is. And even if you're a big Microsoft, house, you're going to have Zoom on the machine as well.
I generally use Teams because I'm talking to Microsoft people, and that's just the lowest friction.
That's
for everybody else, it's Zoom.
I use the only thing I used Teams for was talking to the radio people, the iHeart people, and I quit that job, so I don't have to worry about that anymore. I had a whole, I had Okta, and I had the Microsoft Authenticator, and I had Outlook email, and I had the whole Outlook Workday, and what was that weird thing you used to talk about, which is the HR Happy Viva or whatever?
Yeah, Viva, Microsoft Viva.
Microsoft, all of that. And I just shed that. Like, it just came sloughed off me.
Well, aside from the fact that you're saving yourself $192 a month, I mean, that must feel
they paid for it. I didn't pay for it.
Oh, they did. Okay. Well, someone was paying a lot of money for that stuff.
Yeah. They were a big Microsoft house. iHeartRadio still is, I presume. But, which is funny because the training we always had to do was in Flash. So, should have been Silverlight. Could have been, but no.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not so much. No.
Games in Teams, is that something that we're all excited about?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't understand.
I'm not even excited about emojis in Teams. For crying.
Yeah. I know. I don't
emojis,
understand
they understand. But why games? Why would they put that in there?
Well, it's part of the normal cycle of a social media product evolving.
Right.
You have to go down the various layers of hell. And one of those layers is social games.
Right. Yeah.
Until you go through that tier, you're not really going to evolve.
Wow. Wow. Is it email is next? Isn't that what Zawinski's law is?
Email is the final frontier, right?
Yeah.
If you could get your Outlook email inside of Teams, Outlook usage would probably drop by like 75%, right that day, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, I think there's an imperative at Microsoft to have people live in Teams as much as they can.
Well, there you go. You could do it.
I don't understand. I'm surprised they haven't. To me, that was the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know?
Who is the enemy? Is it at first I thought it was Slack, right? Slack was the kind of dominant. Now I'm thinking they're aiming more like at Discord. They're Discord features.
No, I mean, there's no one solution that maps to Teams. I think they go after different companies in different spaces.
So that's the way to do it though, right? Make yourself the unique collection of features.
Well, in the beginning, clearly it was Slack. That was the point. We're going to do chat-based collaboration.
That's what the Slack folks thought. They were very upset.
Yeah, well, that seemed like, okay. But, but Microsoft, one kind of byproduct of the whole Microsoft experience is that there are so many users. They're so diverse. They all have different needs and wants. They do things in different ways. There's a generation of people who just aren't comfortable, although I think it's starting to change, with chat. They want to do email. That's how they want to collaborate. That's just what they're used to. Is a younger group of people coming up in the world who expect this kind of a tool. Although, honestly, they'd probably be more familiar with Slack or some other sort of millennial type solution. But Microsoft
isn't this what
meeting
this is what Loop was about, right? Like Loop was trying to say, "Hey, you love your
team
email?
That's exactly what it is.
Here's a way to hook it to email. Hook in our collaboration in email."
Do you use Loop, Richard?
Nobody uses Loop. It's a mythical product. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. I've done the run as about it. Stephen Rose was very eloquent. It's kind of a mythical product.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a hard computer science problem, right? So in other words, the promise of Loop is so multifold, it's hard to even describe, but you can have Loop components in other compatible apps, including Teams, but you can also have a Loop app where you could create content in it, like a sort of a Notion style app. And that's interesting to me because it allows Microsoft to move forward with something more modern, but it also respects the past. I kind of feel like
it reminds me of object linking and embedding. This is
baby.
It's exactly that. But I think
it's a modern Olay, and I was excited about it. I think it's a great idea.
Assuming they can pull it off,
that's my disappointment. Is that it's not out yet.
Yeah. Right. So I think. I think Loop maps to the traditional Office suite where you have these traditional apps that are, you know, Word, PowerPoint, Excel, et cetera. With that, that's how people created. We say creating content today. It's not what we said in the 90s, but, you know, whatever. They create documents and spreadsheets, whatever it is. And Loop is kind of a more modern take on that, but it still respects that past. And I feel like Teams does that for collaboration. It's it doesn't have email yet, but it's a more modern approach to two or more people on a team collaborating together, having meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Loop, and if Loop works, Loop, there's no reason why Loop shouldn't be as big as Teams. And those two things together are kind of hand in hand how that part of the business goes forward.
I don't even know if the product's important than the thinking is. The idea of stop trying to get people to give up the sovereign app they're comfortable in. Just make sure that app interfaces where you want them to help.
Yeah, but that's how you do it. In other words, you say, look, we do have this new thing. I don't like new things. But no. Your thing works. You know, you're an Excel guy. Your PowerPoint, it's still there. And you're like, oh, okay, that's cool.
I'm not even going to tell you about the new thing. I'm just going to show you this spreadsheet that's in your email. Mm-hmm. The fact that it happens to tie to the team stuff, whatever.
Or look, you never use Loop, but you use Outlook and you get an Excel thing in an email and it's a Loop component and suddenly you're collaborating with people.
Yeah.
As far as you're concerned, you just got a new feature for Outlook or Excel or however you want to look at it.
Nothing changed for you, really.
That's right.
And that's smart.
I think it's smart. Exactly. That's exactly
right. Except for that part where it doesn't work, it's awesome.
If it could just work, it would be a great idea.
Bar's too high.
It's like if we took away this list of bugs, would our product be perfect? Yeah. No, I mean, totally. Yep. I don't know why we haven't done that yet, but yeah, we're getting there. So hopefully 2023 will be the year of Loop. We thought 2022 was going to be the year loop.
Let's talk Windows. What do you say?
Yeah. I have a lot to say about Windows.
We haven't talked about Windows yet.
So I'm writing a book. I know I haven't talked about this
too much.
You're
always writing a book, Paul. Always.
This requires me to use multiple computers and repeat things and make sure things are correct and on it goes. And I've seen something really disturbing since the release of Windows 10 version 22H2, because that was the version I was targeting for the book. And the first thing Microsoft did was say, so yeah, we're going to release that in October, but then we're going to release this other thing in November. Then that will be all of it. Like that will be the complete set. That those two things together will be 22H2. You're like, okay, fine. Oh, and by the way, we're also going to have these things that we call moments internally, which even though we just said we're only going to have one feature update a year, just bear with me for a second. We're actually going to have 1,000 features a year. We're just going to put them out whenever we want. It's going to be hilarious. You're going to really enjoy it. You're like, okay, that's depressing. But for purposes of keeping the book up to date, I thought this is going to be an interesting test of how I kind of componentize the book down a little bit more, make it easier on myself. Let's see if I can make this work. But here's how it's really gone down. Microsoft has this Windows Insider program, which we might talk about a little bit more later, that no longer maps to versions of Windows. They test features in ways that don't make sense. Sometimes features appear first in the beta channel, which should be the second stage. Sometimes it's first in dev. Those two things don't map to a version of Windows. You never know where something's going to appear. So when the 22H2 update occurred, the second update, the one in November, the November update, they added new features like they promised. They also added new features they didn't tell anybody about. Like, for example, they were testing this in the program, but they never said, hey, this is going to be in the release. So right click on the taskbar and get to task manager. They added that. But what I noticed over the past 2 months was I don't have that on every one of my computers, even though they're all in the same build number. There's a weird inconsistency to it. Then suddenly one day, this new version of the search icon appeared on the taskbar, but not on all my computers. In fact, I think I was one of the first people to mention this. If you go back into the show notes, which you can't access, Leo, so you have to take my word for that. Some month or two ago, I put a screenshot of it and I said, hey, on one of my computers, I've got this kind of, like a rectangular search pill thing. Like it's not an icon anymore. It's a search on it. And they lost the mouse over capability. And then it's a kind of rolled out slow. They've still never talked about it. They are literally testing this feature right now in the Insider program. They're still testing it. It's out in stable. What's going on? It's not on every one of my computers.
Somebody read a book on feature switches and just started putting in the pipeline without telling any of the management. And
I think they are literally beta testing with the public, which I have a huge problem with. But the latest one is last week, I think it was, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and this was never tested in the Insider program, is a new version of the OneDrive app on Windows 11. Once again, I don't have it on all my computers. It has two new features, both of which are excellent. So the existing version of OneDrive will allow you to back up your documents, desktop, and pictures folders to the cloud, and then every computer you have, those folders are redirected. You get your content everywhere. It's a good idea. You can turn it off if you don't want it, you know, blah, 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 whatever. The new version lets you also do that with the music and picture or music and videos folders. Okay, cool. Also, there's a notifications setting interface where you can choose which types of notifications to get from OneDrive. Previously, it was all or nothing. Okay, that's cool. I have three different versions of this app on my computers now. So I have some computer all in the same build. Some computers have the old version 100%. Some versions have the new version 100%. And some have the new version, but when you click on that folder backup thing I was talking about, you get the old interface with only three choices, not five. So here we are. 2022 is coming crashing to an end. We're only 2 months since 22H2 supposedly released. And this is what Windows is right now. And I got to tell you, it not just because I'm writing a book, but because I have OCD or whatever, and I can't stand this kind of inconsistency. This kind of thing is unacceptable in what I'll call stable, because we don't really have a name for it. Like my mother, my sister, my brother, my friends who aren't technical or whatever should not have different versions of things. And they don't know any better. But the problem is when something goes wrong and they have to talk to someone from help, whether it's official or just a family member or friend, the notion that we have different things, I don't understand how that even happens. But that's where we are.
It's definitely going to keep an IT person away from Windows 11 for enterprise if they don't aren't certain what they're going to need to support.
That's right. And there's no documentation anywhere that says, hey, this is what happens when you do this. This is the KB that makes this happen 100% of the time. Oh, and by the way, that OneDrive thing, they've never even announced it. They've never even discussed it publicly. It just appeared. There was one leak. I don't know if it was a screenshot or something, like over the summer, someone had a photo of what it was going to look like. But they never tested it with anybody, not outside of Microsoft. And it just appeared. There was no one, like I said, no announcement. It's just one day someone clicked on it and said, what is this? This looks different. Why? You know?
We never did explain it, did we? Never figured it out.
No.
Just a mystery.
Just crazy.
Just a mystery. I don't have that search pill anymore. I turned it off. So
right.
I don't
right.
participate in the mystery any longer. Although
I have to, because I'm working on this book and it's freaking me out.
Like
I,
yeah.
Yeah. I had to switch. I had one laptop I used for most screenshots and I had to switch to a different one because that one, there are two of those three things. It doesn't have the, what I consider to be the latest version. And I need things to be up to date. Like it's just my life. So, yep. Yep.
You know, you're going to redo all the screenshots before this is over.
That's true, isn't it? That's actually,
well, if this search thing is what they go with, yes, I'm going to have to redo a ton of screenshots. I'm thinking about what's the most efficient way to do that. Like I'll just do a copy replace thing for that part of the shot, you know, but it's going to be a lot of work, you know, I mean, I knew what I was doing when I started, but.
You knew what you were there getting into. That's happened before. I've heard everybody who's ever written a computer book has had to redo screenshots.
Well, last weekend, my deal was, okay, this OneDrive thing happened. I'm going to show how agile I can be. I'm going to update the book to support this new version of OneDrive. I spent the entire 2 days working on this because of those three different version problems, trying to figure out, I don't even know where this update comes from. That's the other problem. There's no indication what makes the change. I have one computer that has the beginning of the interface in one window, and then you click beyond that, and it's just the old one again. Actually, so there's a fourth one. That's a different case. It's the whole thing. This stuff makes me nuts, and it's hard for people like me who are insane to deal with this rationally. It makes no sense, and we'll talk about the Insider program maybe. There's a whole set of problems going on there. At least you can say, look, these are technical people. They know what they do, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. But this is just out in the world. And I don't think it's fair to do this to people. So, yeah. Yeah.
All right. What else? What else?
Just need a drink.
Stay on Windows 10. You'll be fine. Yeah. You'll be fine.
Oh, except I just went. I just saw it for the first time since July 2021. I brought up a Windows 10 machine. I got to say, I hated it. Right?
Oh, really? Windows that's 10, funny.
Yeah. Windows 10 looks dated.
Do you think people can tell, though, besides you? I mean,
yes, I really do. So there's an aesthetic to Windows 10 that was predicated on this notion that those apps are going to run on phones. They're going to run on Xboxes. They're going to run on HoloLens. So they have this kind of flat look, and they're designed to be resized. If you take a Windows 10, they're in Windows 11 still, but you take a Windows app down and you stretch it to like a phone shape, it looks like a phone app. That was the point of those apps. And look, I that's been the dream, you know, forever. I get it. But today, because the phone, I mean, Satya Nadella killed Windows Phone the same year Windows 10 came out. So this thing was obsolete the second it came out the door. And then they ran with it for 7 or 8 more years. I mean, and we'll do so again for another 2 or 3 or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's a very dated look. And, you know, Windows 11, yes, is sort of the Windows Mobile 6.5 of Windows. It's a spit shine right on the front. You scratch the surface, you can see the ugliness underneath. But honestly, I really do like the look, for all my complaints, and I go to town on Windows 11, obviously, but I really do prefer it. And I do like the look. It looks modern and, I don't know, friendly, professional. I don't know what to say. Windows 10 looks dated to me. That's the only way I can say it.
Well, and you're not even pointing at individual features. Like, that's what an average person would do, is just say, this looks wrong.
Yeah.
Right? The same way you're putting up a Win31 screenshot. You're like, that looks ridiculous.
The thing about Windows, it doesn't matter what version you're using. It doesn't matter how far back in time you go. Windows has always been a bouillabaisse of different versions. And in Windows 11 today, we have Windows 10 UIs, Windows 8 UIs. We have Windows Vista UIs. We have some little font things and stupid things that date back to the 90s.
You sure it's not a paella? You sure it's a bouillabaisse?
it's a rich tapestry. It's an archaeological dig. I don't know how you want to say it, but
it's midden. Yes. All right. Moving on.
Yes, please.
Actually, we don't have to move on from Windows, though, because let's talk about
this. Was
the design? The design.
Yeah.
Should I play this video?
Yeah, as cringeworthy as it is, to me, this was the nadir for Windows 11 this year. It was we got to meet the people who designed it, and we realized instantly. they've never used this product and couldn't care less about the history of those people who have.
I'm sure you've seen this, Richard. Let me just
yeah. This is
let me just play
insane.
It.
The process of designing is informed by research. There's a challenge of making sense of it.
You come into a design problem. There's always a blind spot there.
It's really easy to design something that you like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it will work well for everyone.
For us, we need to listen
more TV
and
books
than
go?
Just do. There were a lot of questions that we were asking. Should Start be left aligned or center aligned? Should there be a search box in Start? Should there be an all apps list? Is Start going to feel familiar? Let's let
He's like, I'm
tell
having KFC for lunch.
Put it all
That's
there.
What he was just thinking about.
Here's a search box.
Again,
bar.
The
Here's
TV
the
has been stolen.
Here's your documents. Here's your apps.
We laid those out on the table, and it was really cool to see what all these different people were building.
Do you think they went to Panos Panay's house and said, Panos, you know, can we take the TV
the
and the books
important,
out?
But other people wavered on that.
And they were all
I think
bit,
what they said was, one thing hey, we all use Macs. What's a Start menu?
Files and applications together.
I like how they pretend they're cutting out pieces of paper and sticking them on and moving them
around. So that gave us a lot of confidence that
why would you use technology to design technology?
Yeah. Don't use technology.
I think that one woman was blinking to send us a code. You know, she's like, please get me out of here.
I mean, there's a part of that that makes me, I immediately thought, wow, I'm holding it wrong. No, like just right back to.
I mean, although we realized we couldn't please everyone, so we thought we would upset everyone.
I'd like a cut paper version of Windows. They ended up using cut paper for the wallpaper, but let's do the whole thing that way.
Yep. That's because that's how you design.
Is this is real though? These are designers, right? These are probably the
obviously
people.
Those are designers. Of course they are.
They didn't pick them for their good looks.
Listen, the one thing I believe from came out of Microsoft this year is that video. That's exactly what they did. You know, like they walk around, they're like, I wonder about things. Like, what are you doing?
Get my left-handed scissors. I need to cut paper.
It's like Hitler walking around with his arm behind his back so you don't see it shaking. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what the next start menu is going to look like.
Have you guys ever done a corporate offsite with the folks from IDEO or any design thinking groups? I have. I was on a board, and actually one of the board members was an IDEO principal. And so they come out. There's a person doing drawings, sketching. There's this whole process of design thinking. And yes, Paul, there is a little hand waving. And
oh, you know, I'm sorry. I did a thing like this where they asked us, we sat down at the meeting.
Yeah.
And the woman said, all right, now I want everyone to take out a piece of paper and draw a pig.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the beginning.
We all looked at each other like, what? And I still have this picture of the pig on my refrigerator that Brad drew because it looks like a looks like an elemental hell beast or something. It doesn't look anything like a pig, but
design thinking is a non-linear iterative process.
I've never seen anyone so incapable of drawing a simple object.
used to understand pigs.
Yeah.
I don't know what we learned that day.
Other than that Brad can't draw a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, ideate, exactly.
Ideate.
No idea is dumb. Oh, I disagree. This pig idea is really dumb.
Yep. I'm sure it's a useful process in a lot of regards, but it's kind of like agile in programming, where process suddenly becomes so elaborate and important.
This is okay, but this is the move fast break things nonsense. Like Microsoft showed Windows 11 to the world in July and shipped it in October. There was no time to get feedback on anything. That start menu they shipped in the beginning, that needed a year of feedback. That would have been a very different looking thing if they'd actually paid attention.
Another year of development, right?
Sure. Yep. They just coughed that thing out like a hairball. You know, like it's just, and then they're like, oh, yeah, sure you were. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, stay in the white room, honey. You're fine. it's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We thought we can't please everyone. So we said, screw it. We're not going to please anyone.
Please ourselves.
There's no reason to please anybody, you know?
That's the whole, is it Daniel Kahneman? That's the whole premise of so-called rational thinking is you decide to do something because of your gut, because of your emotion. And then the whole process of rational thinking is rationalizing. Like, let me make a reason up why I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway.
Fine when you do it for yourself.
Yeah.
You're doing this for a product that billions of people are going to use. And by the way, they have decades of expectations.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things you just can't do, like remove the start button from Windows, idiot, or, you know, that they did in Windows 8, or, you know, like put this in front of people to see what they say.
But it's kind of a no win. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with justifications. People are going to be unhappy with anything you change. Change is always bad. Yes.
Look, abstractly, you can say, look, Windows is, I just said, it's an archaeological dig of, you know, decades of blah, 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 whatever. Okay, fine. So one of the goals we might have for the UI is we're going to simplify this thing. Yes. Okay, good. The problem is everyone has an expectation for this one feature that they use. And as you simplify, you have to take things away.
Yeah.
So yes, you're going to break things. You're going to hurt people's feelings. Yes, that's going to happen. I still think there needs to be a feedback loop, right? You have to have an understanding of what the most important features are, the ones that are used by the most people. And also, I think you have to have an understanding of the types of users because there are different, like there may be a small number of people who do something like, I'll just make up something, put the taskbar in a different part of the screen. But who are those people? Are they admins remoting into a remote server somewhere? And it's very important that thing works. And there's only like six of them, but you know what? They really need that feature. You need to pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a
context
point.
Matters, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like this thing was just vomited out. And I think another year would have been nice across the board.
Well, the product contradicts their statements, right?
Right.
Like we wanted exactly to leave it flexible and so forth, except that we took all these things away that lots of people counted on. So clearly design decisions we didn't make design decisions.
Because we are so bad at what we do, we created this new layout that has two major sections with pinned icons and recommended. And if you delete all of the icons and pinned because you only want to have recommended, What are you left with? A giant empty space where pinned used to be that's not used by recommended because our software is so inept that it doesn't auto layout a technology that Microsoft invented in Longhorn 20 years ago. Like, this is, it's just insane. And, you know, it's a year later, so I've gotten kind of used to it. So I forget about my original rage over this thing, but thank you for reminding me. You know,
so the start menu restrained looks, version is what I'm
yeah, hearing. The start menu is pretty. Whether it's functional or not, that's up to the, you know, subjective. But objectively, it is functionally regressive because there's all kinds of problems with it. And it's not just they took stuff away. It's the new stuff doesn't work right. It doesn't work well. And, you know, okay, I'm sorry. I could do this all day. I'm a Pez dispenser of complaints. Anyway.
And now you know why Chris Capicella's not on the show this week.
Yeah. Yes. What you don't know is why my wife is still around 32 years later.
She's staying for the liquor, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. That was, how about Monarch, Project Monarch? This was one of Mary Jo's favorite topics.
This was, I'm curious what Richard thinks about this because I think the dream, well, my dream would be Outlook just disappears. I think it's a cancer, but I know. I understand there are millions and millions of people who love it and rely on it and whatever. And it, the problem with Outlook is that it was born right before internet email mattered, right? It was,
yeah.
And it still kind of suffers from that weirdness. It's still got that kind of mappy infused flavor to it or whatever. It's grown like Teams has into a gigantic thing. But
yeah, my concern is the underlying DLL is the interface to Windows, especially on the networking.
Yeah.
Like that guy has not only retired, he's died. And nobody knows how to work on it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And it's fundamentally
it may broken. Literally be it's P code or something, and no one knows how to use it. And if you're a Microsoft guy and you're using Microsoft email, it's probably fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I would plan for a weekend if you're going to do this. Try to connect Gmail to it. Just have fun doing that. It takes a long time.
And nothing a reforming machine can't fix, really.
Yes.
Well, the way I described Outlook on .NET Rocks was 64 threads. None of them are for you.
Yes. Right.
Why is my CPU at zero? And all the other ones are red hot.
That's good. That's
we're
that's
sorting okay, somebody so, else's yeah. email. Oh,
you
right
thought
now.
You thought your browser was taking up all your resources. So let me give you an idea. Fire up Outlook.
I'm gonna miss doing the radio show. One of the things I love telling people was never look at your activity monitor. Never ever.
It'll just make you sad.
It's just gonna make you sad. Yeah, you don't need to know. Unless your computer is actually burning hot, you don't need to know.
I would just say, look, your computer has resources like RAM and processor. Yeah,
and should use them.
They should be used.
Yes.
You know, you don't hold on to it. It's
for
you don't
the longest put it in your back time. Pocket. I've been getting calls saying, you know, my RAM is 100% used. I said, yeah, that's good. You bought it. You want to use it. Mm-hmm. But my CPU is at 100%. Yeah.
Well, I used to play Call of Duty with Mark, and he would get the nuke or something, some huge weapon that would end the game. And I'd be like, why aren't you using it? He's like, I'm saving it. Saving it for what? You could win the war right now. What are you doing? What are you saving it?
Okay. Like, so I just want to write this down. This is your advice for life. Do not save your nukes.
Do not save. Okay. Do not save, Paul. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Follow my advice.
Yeah.
So anyway, the dream for Outlook is that, well, my dream is something else, but the dream for Outlook is that they replace it with a modern product, right? And so
a single modern product, right?
Outlook, a newly architected something.
Yeah.
So for a couple of years almost, right? A year and a half, we heard about this thing, One Outlook or Project Monarch, you know?
Yeah.
Here it comes, right? There were little leaks and that we got a little nervous about the leaks. And then it kind of arrived and we realized this is just Outlook on the web, but can like an app, like it's literally Outlook on the web, which is fine. Right. But I think we thought this was going to be like a new architecture. We're going to build everything off of this new thing. We're going to have new clients everywhere. It will be more efficient. It will be beautiful and modern. And we are not getting that thing. So I think, this is the 117th product to be named Outlook, which is going to make things a little confusing.
This is the king of outlooks, the monarch.
Yeah, this is the outlook. We're going to call it Outlook 2023. So, yeah, I mean, it's fine. It doesn't solve the problem of how do we get the old school guys off of Outlook who rely on that one feature that they need.
This is taking the Outlook online version, making an Electron app out of it.
Yeah.
So that it looks like it has an icon and you have a unified code base. I mean, the upside of this is now Outlook is also contributing to all of your processes and threads being consumed by Electron, and as opposed to the old Outlook that did it itself.
We figured out a way to make it just as inefficient. You thought it couldn't be done.
But it's in a common stack now. Now, when your browser engine crashes, it's going to take Outlook with it too.
I do. You probably know more about this than I do, but there was a point where Microsoft Office add-in development was kind of up in the air which direction they were going to go, and they went with web technology basically. And I do, and this, so you can write an add-in for Outlook that works on the desktop client, the web. I think that might be it. Maybe on mobile. I'm not sure about mobile. Probably on mobile. And that's, you know, that's actually an understandable goal. It's a good idea. And maybe this was part of that, you know, that thinking, like, we just base this thing on the web. And
sure. But this is all of Office, right? Office was trying to find a way to get away from VBA. And the solution was JavaScript.
Yep. We'll solve that problem.
Ooh. Yikes.
JavaScript, the Band-Aid for all of our problems.
Assembly language of the web.
Yes. Well, except assembly language makes sense. And
there is a web assembly language, ironically.
Sure.
But JavaScript is the lingua franca of the web.
Yes.
Right, right.
Well, and in the end, it's because Office felt they needed to compete with Google Docs and did so. Like, I'm not saying necessarily it was a bad thing either. It's a funny thing, but, you know, because we still can't get away from VBA. Hit Alt F12. Right. Watch it reappear.
Is it really? Wow. Sure.
Still there,
it is still there, but I feel like it doesn't. I think it was this year they turned off automatic VBA macro.
But they did turn that off. Isn't it deprecated by now?
Oh my God! Of course.
Asking for a friend.
Well, it's off by default. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
But you could turn it on. Yeah, you could turn it on.
Oh no!
And I bet you there's a lot of
organizations.
Yeah,
they're utterly relying on it.
Yeah. There's law offices and all sorts of. Yeah, it's. Yeah, it's the same reason Apple.
I liked Visual Basic. I thought, you know, VB Script. I thought was at the
loved
time,
it
a million years ago. But you know, you could do ASP and with VB Script. I thought it was fantastic.
It was powerful for the time.
I will defend JavaScript. It kind of makes sense that Microsoft would choose something that's cross-platform and web-centric. And ultimately, I would think Microsoft's figuring everything's going to be a web app, right?
Yeah,
I think it's just the Office team so far.
Yeah, it is interesting. There was that little brief period of time, and this is over 20 years ago, where Microsoft was going to turn the UI in Windows over to web technology. That did not go over well.
It's fast enough, isn't it? Or no?
I think it might be today. I don't think it was in 1998.
No.
You know?
And there were also, you know, because of, you know, like DirectX, there were issues. Mm-hmm. With security.
What are you thinking? I think ActiveX.
ActiveX.
Yeah. Not DirectX. Yeah. ActiveX.
Yeah. In the 90s, the web solution was ActiveX, which is, let's not use JavaScript. Let's just make stuff run on the web.
Well, we have this thing called Calm. It's too big and heavy for the web. So what do we do? Take away all the security controls. Oh, yeah. No, that did it.
Yeah. Let any rando on the internet run programs on your computer. Yeah. Why not?
Let me tell you, though. You know what, though? Really powerful, right?
Well, some of the best malware was made of it. But is JavaScript more secure inherently? I would presume there's at least a security model.
Well, there's a TypeScript in there for cleaner.
TypeScript's great for functional code.
Kind of type-safe. JavaScript.
And when you're running Electron or any of the or WebAssembly or so forth, you're running in the JavaScript. Browser context, which means you're protected.
Yeah.
Right? You're running in a container.
Oh, it's sandbox because it's in a context. Well, that brings us to MAUI.
Yeah. So I was curious about Richard's. So Richard co-hosts .NET Rocks, which I love. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite episodes every year, well, you probably might do it more than once a year, but I feel like at the end of the year, you talk to Billy Hollis about UX and that kind of stuff. And this year you guys touched on MAUI, which I thought was really interesting. And I've been following MAUI very closely because, as you know better than anybody, there are these classic Windows app platforms like WinForms and WPF mm-hmm. that are actually being updated again in some way, but they're not obviously top of mind in the Microsoft space. But they are still in many ways the best way to create kind of classic desktop apps. But you don't really get that modern stuff, right? You're not getting WinUI at all or easily anyway. And that stuff's all on top of the WinApp SDK, which is the new version of UWP, basically. So now we have
Mount. And they're not cross-client, right? Like, that's the big issue. If you're going to build mm-hmm. a desktop app, and let's face it, lots of people aren't. Right? Like, your typical enterprise is building web apps for a reason. It's going to run on all the devices. And you're always going to have
that's,
the current there version.
You go. That's a really interesting point. So, in other words, if you said, look, I want something that's going to be a desktop class app. I do want it to be cross-platform because I'm not an idiot. I want people to access it on a Mac or whatever, Linux. Maybe the web is a better approach and we have Blazor and whatever else.
You also don't have an install, right? The browser's already on the machine, so you have a security context. You're always fetching the latest version. Like, all of the things you hated about desktop apps are resolved well enough by the web app.
Yeah.
And specifically the progressive web app.
If you go back to Windows 8 and then follow the progression through to today with Windows 11, you have this, Metro originally, whatever it is, UWP, WinApp SDK kind of thing. And the idea was, these are mobile apps. These are bringing the best of mobile to this desktop platform. And by nature, those apps aren't, they're not fully featured desktop apps with lots of commands everywhere in the form of icons and blah, blah, blah. They're lighter by design. They go to sleep automatically in the background if you're not using them, all that kind of stuff, which is all completely laudable. But the problem was, it was not originally cross-platform. And then they went cross-platform within the Microsoft stack, right, with UWP. But now we have MAUI. And MAUI is a way to reach, Mac and Android and iOS. But, I mean, is that forever going to be... They're just going to be mobile. Like, no one's going to write a Microsoft Word type app in MAUI, right? Like, these are by nature always going to be mobile apps, right? Like, how do you see it?
Because that is the subset. Well, MAUI is the manifestation of XAML reunification, right? I mean, the reality is the XAML.
I thought you were going to say Xamarin. I'm sorry, Xamarin, XAML, not Xamarin. So you should explain what that means.
So, XAML comes out into the wild as WPF, Windows Presentation Foundation, in 2006.
Right.
Having been cut loose from what would become Vista, it now gets stuffed into .NET. Right. And nobody at Microsoft uses it. It's basically an abandoned...
which is terrible because WPF was... complicated,
powerful, and our friend Billy Hollis was the one guy who jumped in and actually made apps with it pretty much right away, to the point where I remember being called by team members of WPF saying, hey, we're looking for some case studies, and like, you guys don't know who Billy is? Billy knows your product better than you do. You should go talk to him. But the first product that Microsoft actually implemented with
don't
XAML,
say Visual Studio. We'll don't stop. You dare you get don't right say Visual Studio
2010.
I was going to say, because that was like 10 years later. Well,
yeah, four. It was four.
Well,
it
also 10 was... after they announced it or whatever, Okay. But anyway, but it is still to this day the only major Microsoft app based, at least partially, on WPF. Yeah.
And it probably should have been. I mean, if Bill had been in charge back then and he wasn't, he would have ordered Office to use it the same way he ordered Office to use ActiveX and Calm.
Yep. And you would have had apps that could scale well with the DPI or the resolution, whatever it is of the screen. And as you resize them, it would have done all that stuff. This was the dream of the Longhorn era, was this set of app capabilities that were like incredibly exciting, and then never went anywhere.
No. And the reality, of course, is that it fragmented. When we get to Win8, now there's a big push to get XAML back into the operating system where it was supposed to be in the first place, but they don't want
.NET.
Not with .NET. And so they implement a version of XAML that is .NET free. And then you also have WPF. You also have Silverlight, which is different again.
That's right.
And you also have WinPhone, which is different again.
That's right.
So there's four or five flavors of XAML running outside of Microsoft. Now, this is also true of the .NET framework.
Well, then... this out in the world is Xamarin, third party, is using XAML right from the beginning.
Eventually gets to Xamarin Forms and is now trying to build a standard set, right?
Yep.
But understand that the .NET standard with .NET framework was about aligning Microsoft to a common version of .NET. They had fragmented .NET internally.
Do you remember when .NET standard appeared?
Maybe in the post Win 8 time frame.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So I don't remember. As .NET standards started to succeed and actually unify the versions, they said we should do a XAML standard. That's how they originally announced it. Was, you know how we did .NET standard? Well, now we're going to do XAML standard.
So and just now, we should just explain what XAML is, right? So XAML, the XML-like language for describing a user interface, sort of the sort of as HTML is used on the web. It's kind of the building block of a UI, right?
Well, and to be clear, and was developed by the IE team, right? They ship IE 6 in 2001 with, and it comes out around at XP timeframe, and then they don't make another browser for a long time, right? Not until like 2007. And where'd those guys go? They were building XAML under Bill's orders, right? I mean, that became the codenamed Avalon.
Right.
And why? So Bill wanted this. Why?
He wanted a better language than HTML, and he thought he believed in XML. This was
classic embrace and extend. You've got this thing on the web where you have HTML that describes the layout of a web app or a website, and you have CSS which can style it, right? And they have that sense of themes and styles or whatever in XAML. They wanted, it just wasn't powerful enough. I think they had fallen on their face with Windows 98 when they were going to do HTML for the UI and realized we need to do something in-house that's more powerful than this. We can't just stick with this thing that's a big standard out in the world.
Well, and they'd gotten hooped by CSS 1, right? Because they pushed out IE because they needed to get it ready for Windows. The CSS 1 had not been ratified, which then meant that IE 6 used a different CSS from everything in the world.
And which didn't cause any compatibility issues at all.
Yeah, you started. Everybody built a web page for the rest of the world, and then IE 6.
Yeah. Right.
Remember this site looks best on IE 6, or this site looks best.
I didn't know that's why it was though.
Yeah, that was part of it.
And that's when DHH, David Heinemann Hansen said, listen, I'm not building for IE6 anymore. It's costing me a fortune. And you got that wave of folks that if you loaded a web page in IE6, it popped up a little dialogue that said, you need a real browser.
Like, get a real browser.
Oh, that's sad.
All right, so flash forward to MAUI. So MAUI, you're saying, is the result of the XAML standard. Okay.
Because when Xamarin came into Microsoft in 2016, and they knew they needed a common version of XAML. They were trying to unify it. The problem was that the Xamarin guys, A, are in Boston, and B, are the new guys on the block. And they've got the subset. Like, they've got the base set that everybody should build in. But you're going to talk the Windows team and the WPF team into complying? Like, it just was
just something that is, by nature, a subset. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not. And that's, that's at a very high level. That's kind of what I'm talking about, because it's very limited compared to what you can do with a true desktop app. So they just don't have, just from a list of controls, you just don't have the same level of depth that you get. No, that's not. It's a different.
But it was also the mismatching on the naming. Like, you can figure all that out. But the reality is, you just weren't going to succeed to persuade these teams to unify. And they have, but it took years.
It's kind of interesting that Microsoft has chewed the open standards because they got burned with CSS 1. So they made their own standard and then tried to push that to the rest of the world, right?
They didn't really push it out to the rest of the world. They just tried to push it out internally.
Yeah.
And fragmented the snot out of it.
It didn't. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But thanks to Miguel de Acasa, it did become kind of a standard. Well,
that's what I'm wondering, though, is, so we have this. So now it's out. So MAUI is probably, I don't know where they're at, 1.1 or something. And
really one. Don't worry about the version numbers. Complete?
Yeah, in other words, I don't remember when they released it, but now, .NET 7's out, so it's been updated yet again, blah, 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 whatever.
It was
supposed
to be in .NET 6. They pushed it out in the spring of 2022. They kind of got the feature complete by August. In theory, it's right now.
But the thing is, all right, so, but look, there is no future Windows desktop app platform, SDK, whatever.
Yeah.
But
WinUI is part of MAUI.
Yes. Okay. Right. But it's,
But that,
it's such a mess.
when Microsoft was trying to iterate Windows rapidly, part of that was for WinUI, because WinUI was part of Windows. And so
WinUI is hard. It's the WinUI apps can look great. You know, I was talking about the OneDrive UI or whatever, like what I would call like a Windows 11 style app can be very pretty and nice looking, but getting there, especially from, it doesn't matter how you get there. Existing code base, new code base, whatever. It's hard. Like it's hard to get there.
Built by C++ developers.
Yeah, it shows. And, you know, and so I guess I'm kind of wondering if there's a future where .NET MAUI becomes, or if it just stays what it is, like, you know, it becomes like a more powerful, not quite desktop class, but you know, something more than just a mobile, a cross-platform mobile app platform.
My expectation would be that they will, because Microsoft fundamentally is a tooling company, not a platform company. They have to build platforms for the tools to do things, but what they're actually good at is building tools. They just have to do it later. So, which your real question is, where's the WinForms to MAUI converter and the WPF to MAUI converter?
Yeah, or and those things, better yet, I'd rather have WinUI on top of WPF, you know?
WinUI is deeply integrated into MAUI, even WPF is going to get pulled into this eventually. But that's an inevitability. You need three versions of MAUI to come along. Then they'll have the energy for all the converters. Okay. I mean, there's basic rules still apply to Microsoft. And and then it will consume anything desktop related.
What if the Flutter folks have debate the same
do problem. You care about desktop? I mean, do you?
Yeah, I do, but I'm not a real developer because I think anyone. Well, okay, but I think what you're saying is, if you care about desktop cloud, like you said, web earlier, right? I mean, to me, that does make sense.
Well, and it's why it's winning, right? Like it's Microsoft spent a lot of money to unify a stack to do desktop development. How many people care?
Yep. Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's for better or worse. I like desktop development. But there's one of me.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Does that mean it's over for the desktop? Is that what you're saying?
Well, essentially been true, Leo, that it's at least on the enterprise side of things. You know, why would you really have to fight hard to justify a desktop app? The deployment problems.
Microsoft's still in the desktop business, though. They have a desktop operating system. Yeah, but apps.
So the other side of this coin is that Microsoft or Windows works with multiple kinds of apps, including web apps, right? And so they don't care. They'll bring us your Linux apps, bring us your Android apps, bring us your whatever. They don't care. It makes it a little messy on the developer side because it's like, well, what I want to target Windows is one of the things. How do I do it? It's like, well, you know, you have 15 different ways to do it. There's no one way that back in the day when Windows was everything was like, this is how you do it.
It makes sense though, that's their transition strategy. Mm-hmm. If they are a company that's legacy business is completely dependent on desktop, but they see the future is network mobile. Then what do you do? It seems like this strategy is exactly what you would do.
But they never say this. The problem is Microsoft can't come out and say, look, this is dead. It's not because people don't use Windows. It's because that's not where all the action is with new apps, right? You would be insane as a developer to say, I got it. I've got the best new idea. I'm going to put it on Windows first. So what do I have for Windows? You know, like nobody thinks like that.
A lot of developers have moved to mobile entirely, right? I mean.
Yeah, but it depends on the app, right? And so I think if desktop is important, you mean that broadly. You mean across Mac, Windows, and Linux, right? And that's where web works everywhere. So that does make sense. I will say, and maybe this is a cottage thing and maybe I'm putting too much into this, but if you look at the Mac side of the fence, there is an incredible amount of native app development occurring only on Mac. And it's lots of note-taking apps and writing apps and creative apps. And there's a weird little cottage market for this that really doesn't appear as often on Windows for some reason, even though there's far more of us on Windows.
Yeah, except I think the market in Mac space is a little more coherent. So, you know, it may be a smaller market, but you're going to land more of them. I will throw two other things at you, Paul, and that you could contemplate. Mm-hmm. One is Power Apps.
Yeah.
So the generation tool for making multi-platform clients that plugs into your cloud.
Low code, no code.
Yeah. Yep. And specifically for internal apps.
And an incredible extensibility model. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
But the way it's licensed, you're not going to put it out in the public. It's only for internal. It's enterprise.
Businesses, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The other one to take a long look at that I just think it's so obvious they'll ultimately do something with is Azure Form Recognizer.
I don't even know what that is. So this is
with a name like Azure Form Recognizer, it's got to be.
I mean, you lost me at Azure, but please continue.
Well, it's a machine learning library for parsing a form and recognizing what are forms, what is data, and so forth. Now, normally you think about this in the context of scanning a piece of paper and pulling the data out and automatically populating, which is cool. But there's absolutely no reason that engine couldn't be used to generate new Power Apps pages for you.
And business rules and all of that stuff, right?
All of that, because you can read in such detail.
Right.
So, and then it's now stop thinking paper and start thinking an old WinForms app.
Yeah.
So I take screenshots of each page of a WinForms app and I feed it through the recognizer and it essentially assembles an app for me in a modern stack.
That's nice. That's nice. It's a good feature.
How far away are we from saying, hey, GitHub, I have this WinForm app and I would like it to be updated to a WinApp SDK app. You know, that kind of thing.
Actually, I'm sure they can do it like now with Power. I mean,
Copilot 2.0.
I'm sure they can do it now.
I think you're exactly right. We were on this path of how are we going to retire all of this legacy software? We're going to build tools that automate that process.
So this is historically the issue with Microsoft is they have to support legacy. There are a lot of businesses out there that think that they have to support legacy, right?
But what's their alternative? What if Microsoft says no? Where are they going? What are you talking about? I don't know.
Microsoft rarely says no. Microsoft says pay. Just ask the U.S. Navy how much they're spending to keep XP up.
No, that's absolutely right. But that's what leads to this situation where you have 100 different ways to do things and no clear strategy. And you're kind of on your own. It's nice to have choice, but there's, you know, when there's too much choice, obviously, you know, we all know how that works. So,
but that's Microsoft's business model, Richard. Is that what you're saying? That their business model is keeping
it is
charging for all this old crap.
Yeah.
And the price they pay is that they have multiple platforms in a kind of Tower of Babel.
Right. And you're trading off being a thought leader for just making bucket loads of money.
Well, that's what IBM does. That's what all legacy technology companies end up doing.
And God knows, I wish this was an IBM podcast because that would be fantastic.
Just wait a few years, Paul.
Yeah. Leo, I'm thinking I got an idea for a new podcast.
That's an interesting question, though. When does Microsoft say, okay, we're going to take off the legacy hat and start?
Microsoft almost never says
they're that. They're not going to, right?
That's not true. I mean, they say it all the time. They just don't do it.
Right. Okay. Historically, has that been, is that, you think, the number one issue for Microsoft with security, reliability?
In January, UI. Microsoft is allegedly going to cancel support for Windows 7 finally. Windows 7 came out in 2009.
Yeah.
Right? So they extended the support for it just like they did for XP. They have paid support for the past 3 years for those customers that are still on it. You don't have to go into too many dentist office, optometrists, subway systems. Still see Windows 7 out in the world, right? It's still there. And they have a hard time saying
support.
No.
Windows 1 support is supposed to end in January as well.
That's right.
I will bet
and that came out 4 years later.
Yeah, I will bet you easily Win 7 will be extended and Win 8.1 will be happily retired.
But that's what a lot of users, not just businesses, but a lot of users want. Mostly, I mean, it's business that makes money. But
somebody said to me a long time ago, the trick with Bill Gates is he figures out which way the crowd is going and he runs in front of it, right? You can call it leading the parade if you want.
It's innovation.
Yeah. But, you know, the bottom line is if enough people still want to keep using 7 and they're going to pay for that, they'll go into extended support and they'll stretch it out. And not a lot of people are using Win 8, and the few that are looking for an excuse to get rid of it. You know, one of the reasons you make this announcement is so an IT guy can go to his CFO and say, we have to do this.
That's right.
Right. That's like it's a service that Microsoft provides to give me as ammunition as the IT pro to be able to argue with management. We have to spend money to do the upgrade.
So his cigar chomping CEO can be like, get me Bill Gates on the phone. What do you mean he doesn't work there anymore? Yeah,
but I mean, the bottom line is, if you're going to bet with money and push on those things, then they're going to keep going. But if you're not, now you have the ammo to do the migration. I mean, most IT folks I've talked to do want to retire these old platforms. They just don't have the budget to do it.
Right.
All right. Anyway, Maui's awesome. Both guys that are using it think it's great.
Is there any impact to Miguel de Acasa leaving? Is that, I mean, that's one of the things that happened this year, right? He faded out.
Yeah. He was on different teams at that point anyway.
Oh, okay. And so,
oh, that's right. He was, by the end of the ride there, where was he? It was sort of like Snover working on the Microsoft graph. You're like, what?
Yeah.
You know, no, like, where was Miguel? I can't remember where Miguel was. It just didn't seem to make sense. Like, I was like, you're a certain guy. Like, you should be that guy.
Well, and most people at Microsoft cannot just stay in role. Like, there's very few exceptions to this. Like, Mads Torgensen runs C#, and arguably has crippled his career. And I've said this to him personally, because he'll never move off. That's the only thing he wants to do. Right. And they're going to let him do that, and they value him in that role. But almost everybody else is like, you're expected to move around and to learn other aspects of the business. And even Miguel was in that situation, except you can choose to vote with your feet, and Miguel has plenty of choices.
I mean, he was a hard sell coming to Microsoft to begin with, but
you know, he wasn't only beholden to himself. There were investors. And there was plenty of pressure to go around for giving what is a very capable of technology. You know, this is, again, another .NET Rocks history moment, right? Where in 2011, I said, you know, it seems like Microsoft doesn't love C# all that much, but Miguel de Acasa sure does, because he's making it run on the iPhone and the Android when nobody else is. Right. So, you know, landing that safely inside the central repository was a service to us all, ultimately.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess so, we can wrap up this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, no, I guess we can't. I just got to page two. Never mind. Let me take a break then. we'll get to page two of this year in Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Paul Thurrott.
Sorry, it's a long list.
No, this is the show. And Richard Campbell, great to have Richard from Run As Radio, .NET Rocks. I think if you've been listening, you kind of get an idea of what Richard focuses on. Tell us about Run As Radio and the other things you do.
Run As Radio is a podcast I started back in 2007, because making an IT podcast about Windows when Windows 8 set with Vista shipped was such a good idea. mostly I was frustrated that the few IT podcasts that existed that far back were very vehemently anti-Microsoft.
Yeah.
And yet we were all using the technology anyway.
That's why they were anti-Microsoft. They had to use it.
Yep. Yeah. That's where that comes from.
Like, there are no happy Exchange server admins in the world.
And so it's, you know, once a week, every week for, you know, since April of 2007. Yeah. And it's enjoyable. I mean, it's fun to have that broad landscape, to get all that feedback. You know, I get a lot of email from folks that are just trying to keep their companies operational and working through the problems. And if you can give them some insight, that's awesome. .NET Rocks was started by my friend Carl Franklin back in 2002, which is well before the word podcast existed. I was a guest in 2004 and came on as the co-host on episode 100, which was February 2005. And I just recorded 1826.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Nice job.
Thanks.
A pioneer. Runasradio.com. Is that, if you go there, you'll probably get everything.
It's all in the Vista colors, by the way. When I had the designer,
we refused to change.
If it works. Why change things?
He liked the Metro palette, and by golly, he was going to build it. That website is so full of sysadmin gags, like all the underscores. Those are alt keys that work. Because every web page should have alt keys that work.
If you think that
website's funny, this show is probably for you.
That's good.
All right, we're going to take a little time out, give you guys a chance to take a break and come back with...
My tea is empty.
Yeah, get more tea.
Yep.
As I spill the tea on MIMO Monitors, our sponsor for the show, the entire show. We love MIMO. We were talking earlier about using Teams or Zoom or Google Meet. We use all three, and it is a nightmare, to be honest. It's confusing as heck. So I was really pleased to see Unify Meeting, which is a one user interface for all three. But then I discovered MIMO Monitors, which is the best way to use Unify Meeting. And actually, if you buy a MIMO monitor, and I'll give you a great deal in just a second, you get Unify Meeting for free. It's part of the deal. MIMO monitors, M-I-M-O, a leader globally in industry expert and award-winning small format displays, touchscreens, tablets, kind of purpose-built. You'll see them all over the place, conference rooms, kiosks, point of sale, digital signage. You'll see them in healthcare. You'll see them in schools. Museums love MIMO monitors. They come anywhere from 7 inches to 21 inches, and they're just kind of built to be flexible to suit your needs, to bring your vision to life, and to be durable. And, you know, you can imagine if they're in a school or a museum, they're outdoors in many cases at a kiosk. They've got to be pretty tough. But they're also beautiful, sleek, premium, easy to use, intuitive, easy to deploy. They're designed with durability in mind, created with maximum reliability to stand the test of time, even when they're in use 24/7. You'll also see them in many of the Fortune 500 companies all over the world. Google uses them, Sonos, Grainger, John Deere. In tougher environments, you know, industrial environments, Hertz uses them. In fact, if you've ever done a Hertz rental and used the kiosk, you probably used a MIMO monitor. At MIMO, their touchscreens are designed with human touch. Isn't that cute? Touchscreens designed with human touch. What does that mean? It means customer services is at the forefront. Their U.S.-based customer service team will ensure that when you give them a call, a team member will get back to you promptly, deliver a premium customer experience with the goal of exceeding your expectations. I think that's really an important part of the decision, right? Is am I going to get good service in this company? With MIMO monitors, you are. And then when you use Unify Meeting, you really can, it really sings. With Unify Meeting, if you have a MIMO monitor, maybe one of the little 7 inches, Unify Meeting occupies that full time. It's your calendar all the time. And if you ever want to start a meeting, you don't have to know if it's Zoom, Meet, Teams. You just tap it on the little MIMO monitor. The meeting launches with the unified interface. That's why Unify Meeting simplifies your life. It combines all your favorite video conferencing solutions into one reliable user interface. Since 2008, MIMO Monitors has been the global expert and industry leader in small touchscreen monitors, displays, tablets, designed for businesses and individuals. MIMO's high-value displays drive innovation and provide a seamless experience. All that combined with their superior customer service, their flexibility, that's what makes MIMO Monitors the most trusted touchscreen monitor provider around the world. I want you to try MIMO monitors, but I maybe even more want you to try Unify Meeting.
Try it for yourself.
If you want it for your team, if you're hybrid, remote, you got everybody these days. We're meeting all the time on Zoom and Meet and Teams. Go to unifymeeting.com, UNIFYMEETING, unifymeeting.com. And enter the code WW50 for Windows Weekly, WW50. That's 50% off a year subscription of MIMO's Unify Meeting. Personally, if I were you, I would look at getting a MIMO monitor. We're going to get you 25% off any of MIMO's displays when you use the code WW. And along with them comes your subscription to Unify Meeting. And the display, I'm telling you, is the best way to use it. Anyway, software is great. Try it. 50% off. Use the code WW50. Hardware is great, 25% off. Use the offer code WW, okay? No 50, just WW, limited time offer. And all of that's at unifymeeting.com. We thank Unify Meeting so much and MIMO Monitors so much for supporting Windows Weekly all year long. And we look forward to working with them again in the new year. Simplify with Unify. You're watching the very last episode of 2022. And we're so glad we could get Richard Campbell to join us on today's show. Paul Thurrott and Richard are kind of running down the stories of the year. And I guess we can't continue on without mentioning ARM. Hasn't been a huge success for Microsoft, but they're trying.
It's going gangbusters for Apple. I mean, this is another one I'm curious about Richard's take on this. So Microsoft has been pushing Windows and ARM, you know, for several years. Mm-hmm. Qualcomm has gone through several generations of chipsets. That's the first one was literally the same chip they put in a phone. I think that was the Snapdragon 835. Performance has been lackluster, to say the least. Compatibility has gotten better. You know, obviously they have 64-bit emulation. They have forgetting the name of it now, but that technology lets you mix and match x64 and ARM code in a single project, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But now we're all waiting for that. John, what is
Project
it?
Project Volterra?
Oh. Well, the new Qualcomm chip. Acquisition.
Oh, the Nuvia. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I have to wonder if the mistake Microsoft made here wasn't being exclusive to Qualcomm. Could they have done better, maybe?
They needed – so the way they described it to me at the time, the way Terry Myerson talked about it, was that the impetus to this was actually Intel. They wanted some company big enough to challenge Intel because Intel wasn't delivering what they needed with regards to efficiency. Mm-hmm. They were just going after performance, and they wanted to create these smaller, lighter, thinner devices. And so Qualcomm is the biggest player in this market. I mean, well, at the time was certainly. Maybe Apple might be today, but they're not partnering with Apple, obviously. So
no. Licensed the M1, though. That would be amazing.
Oh, my God. I've said this so many times. You could run Windows on ARM on a Mac, an M-based M1, 2, whatever Mac, and it runs faster on that than it does on real hardware. Mm-hmm. Which is the problem. So Microsoft this year put out this Project Volterra, which is a Mac mini looking developer box, right? Running the latest version of Qualcomm's chipset, which is, you know, is the best yet for sure. It's you know, the problem has always been, oh, we're going to get to Core i5. And it's like, it's not quite there. But this thing's actually pretty spec'd out. I think, you know, it's interesting. I still feel that developers who are going to target ARM, who want that to be part of the what they do, are not going to run Visual Studio on ARM and develop there. They develop on whatever box they have, and they push it out to these ARM devices. Plus, part of the point of ARM really is these touch screens, pens, ultra mobile form factors, 5G connectivity, blah blah blah. None of that stuff's happening in this little box. Like you want to take advantage of the platform, and that's So, but I'm curious. So there's my take is we've been in a holding pattern for years, waiting for ARM to be a thing. Catching up to Apple is like a dream at this point, but just have it be a viable platform for Windows. I mean, we've been playing this game for years, right? Windows 8 and RT.
Yep.
I mean, do you think it's going to happen or what do you?
Well, what happened with Win 8 and RT? Intel got a clue and built Atom, made a better chipset. That was less expensive for Microsoft to just go keep working in Intel with a more efficient processor than it was to actually make their whole stack run well on ARM. And I would argue the core premise, which is there's no developer that wants to develop on ARM.
Right.
It's only on ARM,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But what a dev cares about is his boss not yelling at him. And that comes purely from the boss showing up with a device that the app doesn't run on.
Yeah, right. And so that's not going to happen in the Windows space.
Well, therein lies the core problem. Now, if you want to create a market for something, and that's a possibility, nobody's asking for this, is that you have to make that reference device. You have to make an ARM. You have to make the MacBook Air of Microsoft ARM. Right, you have to make.
Well, Microsoft tried that, didn't they? Right, Pro X?
And arguably, all of the Surface devices are along that same path. Right, Panos has his belief system, and he builds his devices his way. But until you have a device so compelling that it then wags the dog properly, where now you have CTOs, CIOs, CEOs with saying, "I want to use that device. Make sure all my stuff runs." You're not going to get the energy for it.
I feel like
definitely.
God, I'm sorry.
I mean, it's definitely this is something Microsoft feels they need to exist, right? This is not something that customers are demanding.
Yeah, right. There you go.
It be a blocker for a sale. Like once in a while, a customer can say, "Well, you don't run on ARM, so no." But I think that's just an excuse. There's nobody pounding at the door saying, "I can't do this unless you give me an ARM device." That's just not true.
And Intel has responded. I mean, I'm not sure that the first gen of this hybrid architecture with Intel Core 12th gen is quite there, but they've responded. They're going after an ARM style architecture. And I also think that no matter how good ARM gets, no matter how good Qualcomm is able to make a chip, at the end of the day, you have this thing that performs less well than equivalent AMD or Intel hardware, or let's pretend it's just as good. But there's still that little sliver of compatibility. You know, I was just playing around with a printer, all-in-one printer scanner thing. It has custom software that does not run on ARM. So you can't install that. It doesn't matter how compatible things are. That's never going to work. And Intel and AMD are safe. Like they're going to work 100% of the time, you know? Yeah. So if Intel can approach the efficiency of ARM and offer, you know, we can offer a little tablet thing that gets 12 to 24 hours of battery life, whatever the number is.
I don't know that they can, right? Like that.
Yeah. Right. But I'm just, you know, again, theoretically.
Yeah. The amount of electrons you have to move around per cycle in the x86 and x64 chipset is far more than what needs to move around in an M1. It is less efficient because it is archaic. It's been kept around for a long time. Those original 60 something instructions from the MS-DOS from the 8088 days are still in there. Right.
They're in the M1. We found out.
Too, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. But yes. Oh, yeah. No, fair enough. I mean, it's, you know, real world. I don't know that there's a lot of difference between any Intel chipset today and whatever Apple's doing with the M1, like real world. I know that whatever. I mean, whatever.
You'll see it in battery life, right? Like that's the sort of thing where it begins to add up.
Okay.
But you know what fixes that? More battery.
Right. Yeah. But also fix,
a 30-pound machine would last all day.
Well, this is actually what I'm saying, right?
The pandemic fixed it too, because we're all at home next to a power supply. So
exactly.
But you gotta think there's a lot of Apple envy. People are looking at
there absolutely absolutely is a lot of Apple envy, of course.
I think Apple envy is a thing, and also hooking your ship to Intel is scary.
Yeah.
Because they are struggling with their manufacturing teams. The price of their maintaining of compatibility has been a level of complexity even they are struggling to overcome.
Watch, as Taiwan has problems, TSMC has problems. Watch, Apple's already struggling.
Apple's struggling. They just, they killed the Mac Pro, an Ultra chip. Yeah. They may not be able to make this chipset, right? Exactly. They've suddenly run into a wall.
Exactly. So there are other
things. We've got them right where we want them.
And you see the iPhone 14 being made in India.
Exactly.
You know, they're doing the things. And you see the Biden administration leaning on ASML, the manufacturer of the 5-nanometer process machines, saying, we're going to tell you where you're going to get to sell those things, which is a tricky thing to do to a Dutch company, but they're pulling it off.
You can't sell EUV to the Chinese, which means they can't smaller productions. So I feel like it's a matter of time before they figure out how to do it. But
I will say, going back to the original part of this discussion, when I was talking to Terry Morrison, his whole thing at the time was he didn't care what won. If the end game was we kick Intel's ass and it gets them in gear and to where they need to be, Intel could win. Who cares? We just want to be in that space.
Well, I can going way back. There's always been animosity between Microsoft and Intel,
to some degree. Yeah,
I mean,
while also having to take care of each other.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're Wintel, but it wasn't like a love affair. I mean, I remember Andy
that's
Grove.
What Surface Gate was. Remember that? Yeah. They'll go to recent times. 2015, I think it was, when the Surface Pro 4 and original Surface Book came out. Microsoft went with whatever the Silver Lake, whatever the latest version of the Intel chipset, where they were the first out the door, ran into all kinds of problems, blamed Intel.
You and I had
I talked to other PC makers at the time, and I said, hey, was this generation particularly buggy? And they said, no. They said, Microsoft has no idea what they're doing. They think that this is Intel's responsibility. It's not. We fixed those problems. That's what.
Yeah.
We had no unusual problems.
No one knew.
They had all kinds of problems.
Lenovo and Dell and HP had been doing all that behind the scenes.
And Microsoft was so mad, they cut support in Windows 10 for some older Intel chipsets in retaliation for Intel's not fixing the problems. And, you know, as Intel told them, no, that's your responsibility. That's your job. That's what you do.
That's how this works.
But it is a hereditary animosity. I remember Andy Grove telling me he was mad because Bill Gates wouldn't do 32-bit. And he said, we've got the hardware, but there's, I mean, this was how long ago that was, but there's still 16-bit.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it seems like there's always been a little bit of tension. I guess that makes sense.
You know, that's actually an interesting way that the world has changed, because there was a period of time where, like, Windows was too big for the hardware. There was a period of time, like, Windows, the hardware has to catch up to Windows, right. You know. Mm-hmm. We live in an age where there's limitless capacity. Yeah. You couldn't make Windows. Well, you could add Outlook and Teams, but and Chrome. But
Teams,
normally. You know, you could run Windows on anything now. It's almost like the new Doom. You know, it's going to be running on a Christmas ornament.
No, that's absolutely true. Hardware is so good now.
Yeah. Yep.
But so by that token, Microsoft needs to pursue ARM to maintain an option, even to put pressure on Intel, to have an alternative if they do stumble. It doesn't mean it's important. You know, if I'm wearing the director of IT hat and I have a team that wants to work on this, I'd probably push back on that. Like, you know, we're in cost-cutting times right now, and this project is unlikely to produce meaningful results.
Yeah, and I think what you said up front is true. You're not going to get anyone in a C-level position coming to IT saying, you need to support this, because those people don't exist. There is no ultra-desirable.
The device doesn't exist.
It's not driven by demand. It's driven by business strategy. Fair to say?
And it's the thing is, like, Apple's good at creating demand. They make a device that everybody wants.
Yeah. It's sexy.
They want to make sure that Apple doesn't run away with this kind of, I call it performance per watt kind of thing, because at some point it just gets silly. But to be fair to Microsoft, Microsoft had been badgering Intel about this for years. It had nothing to do with the M1. This predates that. I mean, Microsoft, this has been the issue forever. This was the issue 12 years ago when Microsoft was getting ready to release Windows 8. And went to Intel and said, guys, you know, we need no fans, lots of battery life, blah, blah, blah. And at the time, Intel was like, yeah, we're not doing that. Here's a K-series processor with four cores. You know, have fun. That's what we're doing.
And you can cook food on it.
Yeah, exactly. You can fry an egg on the thing. Yep. Yeah, okay. I've always kind of felt this, you know, I like the push. I think the end game is going to be Intel /AMD, figure it out, and it just becomes unnecessary. But it was a lever to push those companies in that direction.
You've got to know that there's a lightweight chipset in a lab inside of Intel somewhere where they're trying to emulate the instruction sets of X64. Because that's where the M1's at, right? The M1's at a point now where it's able to emulate the Intel instruction set almost faster than Intel can run it. So we're at that bubble where this legacy now will just be an emulation problem, but you'll have a modern chipset available to
this
you.
This is
you build for the new platform. You can go ahead.
It's literally the hardware version of Loop.
Yep.
We will support the past because you need it, but we're moving forward with this new thing, right?
Making a new thing. And because the horsepower allows it.
That's actually really interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and our CPUs are so fast these days, most of the time they're smoking cigarettes and playing poker anyway, waiting for us to click a key.
That's really true. Like,
exactly.
That's not what's holding us up. It's not the CPU. Yeah.
No, that's true.
That's kind of a delusion consumers have. They still look for the fastest machine.
That's where the mentality of I'm holding, I don't want it to use all the RAM. What are you talking about? Yeah. Why did you buy it? It's like I bought a 12-cylinder Mercedes, but I only want to use four of the cylinders. I might need that power later. What are you talking about? Hit the gas.
That's also how PCs were marketed for years.
Well,
right?
The megahertz on their gigahertz. Right? Yeah.
Sure.
You know, then you go, if you ever get a chance to lay your hands on like the Rolls-Royce pamphlet, when you get to the specs page on a Rolls-Royce, it doesn't have horsepower on it. What it says is sufficient.
It's sufficient.
Yeah. I would hope it was more like ample.
I just saw a stat that I don't know if it's true, but I think it is, that 80% of all Rolls-Royces ever made are still operational.
That's crazy.
Oh, wow.
So it is sufficient.
The Windows 7.
You can't say that about PCs.
But Apple markets
that
way.
But they are getting there, right?
It's sufficient. It'll do what you want all day battery life. Yeah.
PCs have gotten, this is a hard thing to say. I'm going to suggest PCs have gotten so good, bear with me, that Microsoft has had to artificially limit which generations of chipsets can upgrade to Windows 11 because the truth is it would work fine. Whatever, you know. I just pulled a third generation Intel Core PC out of a box. I've not booted it up. It's actually a quad core chip that old is pretty amazing. I bet it runs Windows 11 fine. I bet it does. You know, not supported, but I bet it's fine.
As long as you put a decent video card on it, it'll be fine because it's pretty GPU dependent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And decent, I mean $100, right?
You're like, yeah, this was the era of this. It's literally 10 years old. So let me go back in time and think about that. It probably has a new enough Intel integrated graphics that it could run Aero. But remember, that used to be a problem. You would get Aero Basic because the Intel, you know, the integrated graphics were so terrible.
Yeah. No, put a card in, please.
Yeah, no, there is actually a card.
For $100.
Yeah, exactly. Yourself. You could probably get one for free now for that thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah. Okay. I feel like we touched on something.
DuckDuckGo. We did Project Volterra. I mean,
yeah. So DuckDuckGo is just is not a Microsoft topic, except that it is, right? So DuckDuckGo is blocking trackers and doing all this stuff. And then somebody noticed, a researcher, we'll call him, that he just did an audit. He says, this can't be right. It says, it looks like you're not blocking Microsoft data flows, is what he called it, for LinkedIn or Bing. And DuckDuckGo had to come out and say, yeah, you're right. We have a secret agreement with Microsoft that prevents us from blocking their stuff. We're working with Microsoft to change that. And then some number of months later, I don't know if I put the time frame, I guess I didn't. But some number of months later, they updated, and now they block Microsoft trackers, just like they block trackers from, you know, Meta, Facebook, Google, Amazon, whatever. So it took them a little while and a little bit of public embarrassment, but that finally happened. And kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I think the deal here was they were probably relying on Microsoft Bing, because DuckDuckGo also is working on their own search engine, and that's one of the sources they use. You know, they're setting themselves up as kind of an alternative to Google and Chrome and all that kind of stuff. So, but it was an interesting news item to me because it kind of put, you know, Microsoft in this role was kind of the villain, which is kind of an interesting thing. You didn't see a lot. Yeah, you didn't see a lot of that. Anyway, it's fixed.
The idea that there's a data stream going to Bing, is that true?
Well, it's not being answered. It's like the SETI program. I mean, they're sending it. But yeah. Well, you know, actually, I mean, not like Apple exactly, but I will say Microsoft's ad business is one of the fastest growing parts of the company. It's still very small, you know, but once you get past the big three are probably what, Google, Meta/Facebook, and probably then Amazon. I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft was next. I mean, I bet it's somewhere in there. But, you know, that's like saying, you know, Carl's Jr. is one of the biggest, you know, hamburger chains in the world. Like, yeah, they exist, but that, you know, they're just not, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on Alex Kipman / Bill Gates, but did we? I guess we didn't, but Microsoft had their kind of comeuppance with that stuff this year. I think anyone who appeared in a virtual aquarium like he did should have been fired, frankly. There was some nastiness there. And then Bill Gates, you know, the Bill Gates legacy is, I think it's fair to say, it's going to be mixed. There's some good and some bad. But I don't know. Not as bad as the old days. There used to be horrible stories. Remember, like, Brian Valentine, and there were all these guys. There was a lot of this garbage back in the day. But I will say, you know, when we think about Satya Nadella as a CEO and whether or not he's doing a great job or whatever, it's disappointing to me that this part of Microsoft didn't improve under him, although it looks like now it finally will.
Well, the fact that they're being let go, and we know they are because of that. Like, often folks were able to just retire.
Oh,
and then reappear somewhere else.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The fact that
the complaints went unheeded. Yep.
Yeah. Verbal abuse, sexual harassment, like, they're saying the words now. And that, I'm going to have to call that progress.
That's different. No, you're right. That's absolutely right. So let's move on from that. That's an ugly topic. but anyway, it's just, well, yeah, it's a little, you know.
It is. It's just terrible. I agree. It's terrible.
We did kind of talk about GitHub Copilot a little bit. Yeah. What's that GPT thing? The
Chat GPT.
Like, so the Chat GPT of programmers.
It's the lesser known AI.
I've been calling. I've been calling them Dunning-Kruger amplifiers for a reason. As long
Explain
as you
that.
Know nothing about the subject, what it generates is awesome.
Sure.
But if you do
is
know
Is it that
about
hard
subject,
to Google this? I mean, you
Well, that's
on...
what you're... It's replacing Stack Exchange, right? You just... It's the yeah. same as a Stack Exchange search.
Stack Overflow.
Stack Overflow.
Stack Overflow. Yeah, sorry.
To the point where Stack Overflow said, please don't put ChatGPT answers in the...
Right. They don't want to junk up their system.
Copilot does great hello worlds in languages, programming languages you don't know. If you ask you to do it in languages you do know, you're shocked at the code that it generates.
Is it that bad, really?
Sometimes it is. Yeah. You know, this the thing is, like, it's just like news stories. If you know the subject well, you see the errors in the news stories, and that makes you make question all of them.
Right. Or if you know the language well and you realize this is like not English as a second language. This is like English that was generated by a computer.
Right.
You know, it was like auto-translated or something.
There is one useful feature. Mm-hmm. You can put a long, complex, regular expression in there and it'll tell you what it's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's
a bunch of useful features there.
I think there's things you could do with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As long as you didn't let it write your program for you.
Well, you could try. You're just... going to have problems, right? Like that's the this idea that you would generate code you that you don't understand.
That's a
has
bad
been a
idea.
Going, but it's been a going theme in development for a long time, right?
I mean, I've been doing that Stack Overflow, years,
people so cut and paste all the time.
I mean, that's how else are you going to learn?
Grabbing it from GitHub, like it's all the same mistake.
Yeah. Well, this
is going to burn you the same way.
Yeah. In fact, there are a number of security flaws we talked about on Security Now, which arose because people used Intel's reference code as the code. And it had no, you know, safety checks. It had no sanity checks. It was just, you know, it was a demo. It wasn't intended to be used. But programmers, I don't want to say programmers are lazy, but there are, you know, they're
people are lazy.
You got bosses saying, how many pages of code have you committed this week?
Get it done.
Get it done. And it came from Intel. How bad could it be?
It could be interesting if they would rerun the machine learning model that generated Copilot, but now, you know, filter the data set. Make sure the code that you're looking at is secure code.
Yeah. You know, that, by the way, they already have that. This is something they could do.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah,
and
that's
probably should.
I think that's gonna happen.
Sure. This is early days. I mean, this is...
Yeah. I feel the exact same way about ChatGPT. I bet I see these as experiments that are now revealing a new class of problem, which ChatGPT's done a great job of showing, hey, we're actually using copyrighted art as a training problem. That's why you keep seeing artist signatures on it. So now fix that. Stop training on stuff you shouldn't train on.
My plan is by the end of next year, every graphic I put on an article will be auto-generated by AI. I'm just going to say this is what the article's about, and it's going to spit out some nonsense, and people are going to be like, what the hell is that? It's what it said.
And make sure you have a mangled signature of Charles Petzold in the corner every time, and you'll be good.
Exactly. That's beautiful.
I mean, we're continuing to experiment, and there are consequences to the experiment, but I think they're good ones. This idea of the quality, you know, this is the original ComSci complaint. Garbage in, garbage out. You train a model on crappy data, you get crappy results.
This is, well, my God, it just keeps going on and on. The, you know, Microsoft stopped selling facial recognition to law enforcement because it was racist, showing a bias from the middle-aged white guys that programmed it. Lisa, Leo's wife, last week used, what was the thing she used?
Lenza, which is an AI, it uses Stable Diffusion on the back end, but it's an app for iOS. Yeah. I think they fixed it, but...
I know, but the fact that they had to fix it
was horrific.
To know about it.
It was horrific. So it generated my image, reasonably well.
Heroic, you know, whatever.
Good looking.
And then it generated her, and it was like busty, naked women,
She was.
I mean, this is, like, this is the, so that, I think that when you want to explain.
I saved those pictures, by the way.
Of course you did. I hope they're like hanging in your house. But
it was very sexy.
When you try to explain,
it really is. It's terrible.
Well, the AI bias is a hard thing to explain to normal people because AI is hard to explain, period.
Well, until you look at a Marvel superhero collection, I think it's rendering exactly.
Right. Well, and that's where it was trained on, obviously. Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
obviously.
There is a setting in Stable Diffusion to eliminate NSFW results, and they obviously figured out to turn that on.
I believe Lisa said she did that when she did it, and it's
you don't really get the choice in the Lenza. I think it's one of the things it asks you, which is probably telling, is are you male or female? And although I think that's what she did, she tried it as a male, and then it was still just as sexist. So I don't know. Sure. There are a few pictures of me with no shirt on, so maybe
Like a romance novel cover.
Yeah, you know, with flowing hair. It's not too revealing.
But this is a problem. I mean, when did what was it called? The Kinect come out, right? Whatever year that was.
Same, Microsoft's Kinect have the same problem.
Well, it had a different problem. It was a racist problem. So we set it up in our living room. A little black girl from across the street came over, and it wouldn't recognize.
She couldn't play this thing.
It was the most awful moment. Like,
that's terrible.
It was just awful. It was awful.
Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah,
but this is the limitations of things that are, you know, it's not done maliciously.
No,
but that that's what the bias is. It's like
when you only have a bunch of white guys testing it, there you go.
Yeah,
it's the data set,
and you would notice it in the data set if you didn't, you know, if you were paying attention.
I mean, I would say ChatGPT writes hilarious.
Oh, it's good. I think it's great. Like, I love ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Patrick in the Discord is saying he generates great short stories for his 4-year-old son. Like, that's
perfect.
That's actually kind of interesting. So, that shows kind of a level where it's at, maybe. And, and then it gets better over time, right?
Yeah.
That use alone is very interesting. It's almost like the, assistant, tell me a story or something, like something you might have, like as a children's story. Sounds kind of similar. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there are worse things. I just suspect that they're going to go back and retrain again. It's also not a learning model, right? Like, it's set. If you ask it anything past 2021, it doesn't know.
Yeah.
It stopped in quickly April. Tell you, yeah. It's like, hey, yeah. I made yeah. this model yeah, yeah. at this point. It's going to become less relevant over time.
In some ways, it gives
you confidence it's not going to destroy the world because it's not continuing to learn.
Well, I think it was more an issue of expense because it would certainly be possible to have an AI that was constantly scraped, just like Google constantly scrapes the web.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you're willing to pay for it, OpenAI, Sam Altman said, I think it costs $3 million a day for ChatGPT just to take the queries. It's about 10 times more expensive than a standard Google query. So if we're also doing new training all the time, imagine, you know.
Well, and maybe this is the future. This is the new Google.
Oh, it is the future. Absolutely. I have no doubt about it. I'm actually blown away that it's as good as it is. I mean, we can't figure out how to drive a car down a street.
Right.
That is complicated.
Yeah, it turns out. You know, yeah.
The problem is that when ChatGPT hits the curb, you don't notice it near as much.
Exactly.
Not that it's not hitting the curb. It doesn't have as much impact.
ChatGPT does not kill yet.
Yet.
All right. Well, I'm gonna now generate more nudes of my wife. So if you guys want to continue to talk.
Yep.
Go ahead. PC sales started all right at the beginning of the year. Tanked.
This is a big story because there was that moment of time during the pandemic where PCs were back, baby.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it was exciting. You couldn't buy them. You know, the whole component shortage thing happened. And I think this year is the fallback to reality moment. But it's kind of brutal how it's happening. It should have been easy to see coming given all the gains we had over those 2 years. But now we're seeing double digit losses. And PC makers and Intel have all predicted double digit, I mean like 20-something% downturns for this quarter, holiday quarter. Which is kind of unprecedented. So it's going to be, I'm hopeful that we bought them out, but the question is going to be when.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know how much this has to do with PCs. It has to do with just inflation, right? Like, it is a discretionary buy, and everybody's hauling back on discretionary buys. And I would argue PC is one of the most expensive buys you make in a household.
Yeah. And they last. I mean, that's the thing we were just talking about. They actually last a long time. I haven't turned it on, but I really feel like I'll bring up this tower. It's an i7, but third gen. We're literally on 13th gen on the desktop now, which is what this is. So we're 10 generations newer, but I bet it's fine. You know,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I'm going to use it for the podcast or anything, but I mean, it's probably fine.
Probably. Well, and the biggest competitor of the iPad is your old iPad, right? Like
Right. So they're hitting the same problem Windows had, right? Mm-hmm. The biggest competitor to Windows was always the previous version of Windows.
When you're currently running. And so now the hardware is kind of topped out, and you're not getting a lot for buying your new machine anymore.
Yeah. A lot of times when the advice for any new device, but just use iPad as a great reason, is like, well, you're not going to buy the new one unless they dramatically change it, which they kind of did this year. But the performance benefits year over year are minor. But most people have had these things now for 4 or 5 years. So if you go back and look at what that thing was, like, yeah, actually, this is a pretty good upgrade for you.
And the battery,
you'll notice
the real look.
Yeah. Right.
That's right. Battery stops. Starts to fail.
You're really just buying a battery. Exactly. just want better battery life. Exactly.
Time for a new battery.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like PCs are actually going away. It's that they overprojected because they took a grade line off of an unreasonable number, and we have external economic forces. And that term annoys me. It seems like an excuse for all kinds of things, just like the pandemic was a year ago.
They love it's act of God is what that is. That's basically. That
says. Apple's been using the word headwinds. Yeah. We have headwinds.
Headwinds. We have headwinds.
It's like they're sailing.
Yeah. It seems like excuses. It really does.
Yep. It is. But that's what happens.
Let's
probably
talk
could
about,
have ordered these better.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about departures, but Joe B is another one, and he'll be missed, right?
Yeah, Joe B doesn't have the problems Alex Kipman has, other than the fact that they look alike. But Joe B's
they're
interesting.
They're both long-haired because, hippies. Clearly, that's
yeah, exactly. I'm actually pretty sure Joe B is Alex Kipman's kid, but
he's about that size. I was nervous around him. I felt like if I fell
is
on
he
him,
tiny?
I'd kill him.
Is he tiny?
He's a small guy. He's a very small, petite person.
Oh, that's cute.
He is the Davy Jones of our group.
Oh, he is. He's got the hair too.
So I he's interesting to me because he parallels my career, and I. In the mid 90s, Microsoft, before the internet was a big, or broadband was big, or, I wasn't really going to too many industry events, they would have developer events or just events, and they would broadcast them over satellite. And the way you would see them locally is you would go to a movie theater. And I watched a presentation that he gave about the future of Internet Explorer, probably in 95 or so. And they were talking about IE2 and 3. And Richard earlier mentioned some things they did that were incompatible and all that stuff. I almost blurted out something about this because at that time they were doing things with frames that would eventually not make its way into the spec. And so, IE2 or 3, I don't remember which one, I think it was IE2, had like colored frames and did all this stuff that never happened. It just something, they were kind of hoping was going to happen. But that Joe B was the presenter. And I found him to be very dynamic and exciting and interesting. And he was not what I sort of thought Microsoft was. And so that was very interesting to me. And then I got to meet him a few years later and I knew him for a long time. And he's a great guy, but he was, he played a key role in a lot of interesting products, Windows Media Center, Windows Phone. Then the Media Center guys got in trouble with Jim Alchin because they came up with the Z Home brand and promoted it at CES or Comdex or whatever it was. And they came down and said, yeah, you're not doing that. This is Windows, you idiot. They got in a lot of trouble. He went on his little hiatus, came back. He tried to do some stuff with Windows 10. Unfortunately, announced a bunch of things that never came out, like Sets, which is basically tabs on all apps. Mm-hmm. And then later kind of said he never made those promises when you could go back to the video and say, yeah, you did, which was unfortunate.
Let's roll the film, Jim.
Yeah, which is an article I wrote, and that's too bad because I love the guy. But it's like, dude, I'm sorry, but you did promise this, we mentioned Snover and Miguel de Casa. It's interesting that at the end of his tenure at Microsoft, he was in some part of the company where you're like, what? And he was basically in the Office 365 group working on user experiences related to broader, I guess, Microsoft 365. Stuff that he wasn't really in Windows anymore. And I was kind of like, what are you doing? But then he left and I'm sure he's fine.
It's almost a Siberia effect, right? It's like you sort of get pushed off into a kind of Siberia as a hint. But they're never going to fire you. It's too expensive.
Yeah, because you're too, but you don't really, it's fair to say that like the things that you worked on back in the day that were important aren't as important anymore. Where else could we use you? You know, that kind of thing.
And nobody at that level needs the money, right? Like you're kind of at that. Like,
and that creates its own problem, right? You get this guy coming in every day who just, you know, does he give a crap? I mean, you know.
And once he gets to that point, it's like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did. I would have left much longer ago, but.
Yeah. And they also surround themselves in their own bubble. Like they see in their own way. Yeah.
He's a good guy. He is a good guy. I'll always remember him as a good guy.
It'll be interesting to see if and when he resurfaces too, because often these folks reappear somewhere else. Like,
I don't ever understand. I know. What are you doing? You know, I'm dying to talk. He's living in Boston now. I moved like an idiot. Yeah. I could have been hanging out with Snover in Boston, but I'll go see him at some point. I can't wait to talk to him about this. I don't know why he's working. I guess because he would be bored. And
that mind without an awful lot to do, that could be very destructive. So SRE at Google, which arguably is their most solved problem.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird mix. I don't get it, but you'll probably talk to him before I do. I'm curious about this one. I want to
do that show in a second.
There you go.
I want to show you what ChatGPT wrote about this show, queried by our own engineer, Patrick Delahanty. Write a script for Leo Laporte to introduce this week's episode of Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and guest Richard Campbell. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Windows Weekly. I'm Leo Laporte, and with me as always is the one and only Paul Thurrott. This week we have a special guest joining us, none other than Richard Campbell, co-host of .NET Rocks and co-founder of Strange Loop Networks. We have a lot to discuss this week, including the latest updates to Windows 10 and Microsoft's new Surface devices. We'll also be taking a deep dive into the world of .NET and discussing the latest developments in the tech industry. So sit back, relax, and get ready. I'm never, ever going to say that phrase. For an informative and entertaining update episode of Windows Weekly, let's get started. Thank you, ChatGPT.
So, now mostly, go home, right?
Well, it found stuff
Windows
about Richard Campbell.
A lot of day.
Yeah. It's all correct. And it interesting.
Barely have mentioned Surface.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. That's impressive.
This comes from, remember, April 21 is the last time it was trained. So it doesn't know about a lot of other things. But I would the pilot phrase, sit back, relax, and anything. You will never hear that come out of my mouth. That's the worst cliche ever.
I usually just break it down. Like if someone's freaking out, you just like, relax. You know, they usually
does it. Chill, dude. Chillax. All right.
Yes.
Have we done one more?
Okay. I finally wrote this up today. I've had this thing sitting mostly complete in a folder somewhere for months, which is the problem you have experienced, Leo, which is that the Windows Insider program is broke.
Yeah. Somebody sent me a long email telling me what to do to fix it. And I think eventually it ended up, wipe your hard drive and reinstall it.
Okay. Yeah. No, there is that way. There is the nuke it from orbit option that's always available. Oh, by the way, unless you're on Windows on ARM, the worst part of this story, let me explain the story first. So back in the day, the dev, beta, and release preview channels mapped to some version of Windows. Today, they do not. Microsoft, actually, in their official documentation, claims that the beta and release preview channels do map to a version of Windows. That is not true, but whatever. The issue here is that you can't get out. And so what Leo did was at some point early in the year, against my advice, by the way.
Oh, yeah. You told me not to, huh?
I think so. That's how
I'm going to throw anyway, the challenge bag here on that one.
Well,
go to the tape.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If I did advise you or okay it in some way, it was only because the way the system is supposed to work is when a version of Windows comes out, you can optionally in Windows settings say, when that version comes out,
slam the window.
Stable.
Slam the window. And
here's the thing.
You and I both assumed that would be possible.
Well, because that's how it works.
So I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all, Paul.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
And I don't remember. You might well have told me that.
If you could just sign some paperwork to that. So the issue is that you have people who are in the dev or beta channel or whatever channel, and they've clicked that box in settings that says, look, when this version of Windows comes out, I'm out. But this version of Windows is never coming out because this thing is not tied to a version of Windows. So there's a system in place. Microsoft has done this from time to time. They've had these little windows where they say, okay, guys, you can move between channels, right? Or you can just, you know, move out. And those they're not available now. So that's bad. Now, if you're on an x86 machine like everyone in the world, it's, you know, you can blow it away and go from scratch, right? The problem is if you're on Windows and ARM, there is no ISO for you. You can't.
Right.
There's no way out. You can't get out. This is literally a dead end, one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is, there's no way out. Now, there are unofficial builds. If you can Google it, you might be able to find an unofficial Windows and ARM build. But Microsoft does not make those ISOs available publicly. And I'm sorry, but you can't do that to people. Like, there has to be a way out. And they've just been silent on this. Like I mentioned up front, you know, 22H2 shipped over 2 months ago. People who wanted to get out of that program when that thing shipped should have been able to do so. And I remember saying to Leo at the time, I was like, well, you know, 22H2 ain't complete until the November update comes out. Maybe then we'll, you know, nope. And those guys have all gone home for the holidays, by the way. So it's not going to happen this month. That's for sure. I don't think it's going to happen at all. That's the scary thing. I just feel like there's no, I feel like nobody really cares.
Yeah. I mean, the state of the Windows team is an interesting thought all by itself, right? It's just to where it's at. It's used to being the most important thing at Microsoft, and that's not been true for a while now. And so, you know, who's leading what and how are things getting done? And the program, I mean, on one hand, you say wiping hardware should be the way it goes. That's what beta testers do.
Yeah. And by the way, that's fair enough. The thing is, I don't remember the numbers anymore, but when Donna Sarkar was running the Insider program, she at one point, they published numbers like there was 17 million people or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is once you get up to these numbers, like not all these people are technical, right?
No.
You need to offer some way. Technical people can wipe it out unless they're an ARM, right? You know, the most technical people in the world are the ones most likely to have some ARM hardware, which they might want to test in the Insider program. You can download Insider builds of ARM. So you could go to a different, I think you can get dev or beta build. So you could do that, you know, but you can't download like a stable ISO of Windows and ARM. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's also the problem
with the ARM initiative too, right? It's like they're not.
Oh yeah.
All the way.
But
there.
Actually, to your point, Richard, like, you know, back when I came into the industry, Windows was personal computing.
Mm-hmm.
Windows was it at Microsoft. All the best and the brightest, that was the world. And over time that changed, right? So the Windows Insider program began as part of engineering, right? Today it's more, I would call it kind of a sub PR kind of a thing. Community outreach maybe is the right way to put it. It's more community based.
And if it's really supposed to be an Insider program, it shouldn't be open to everyone. Like there should be a qualification level. And things should be hard there, right? If we're actually testing, I think the reality is most people sign up for it because they think it's going to be cool. They put it on a machine that isn't important to them, and then they stop using that machine.
That's right. And they turn it on months later, and it's out of date, and they have to go to the latest build, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole other story to the Insider program. I don't want to bore you with, Richard, but you haven't been around to hear me rant about that. But basically, the dev beta release preview channels, it was kind of this is a contract of a sort, right? I'm joining this thing. I'm going to join it at this level and this is what I'm going to get. And Microsoft after the fact changed that to be this meaningless void of whatever. We're just going to test new features of whatever kind. Sometimes they appear first in beta. Sometimes it's in dev, you know, we're all over the place. Okay, that's cute, but can I just get out of this? No, there's no way out of it. You know,
except for wiping the machine.
Look, kids, Big Ben.
The only way out.
Right. Yep. It's too bad. And, you know, someone had asked me last week, they said, you know, you used to know all these people in Windows. Like, you don't really seem to know anyone in Windows. You know, I'm like, right, I don't. Because all of the best and the brightest at Microsoft today are not in Windows. They're in the parts of the company that are growing or that might be new business up and coming things. Mm-hmm. You know, Windows is a kind of a stable whatever, but it's a legacy business now. And it's just not where, if you want to advance your career at Microsoft, you're not going to Windows. Like, yeah, who would do that?
Right. That's your most choices are in Azure.
Right.
And so you have a group of folks that are in Windows because they've always been in Windows. I would argue they're all volunteers. Like, if you've been in Windows for 30 years, unless you have eight wives,
do you think there are people who've been in Windows for 30 years? Do you think there's anybody there for that long?
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. Because
they're keeping the nose down. You don't hear from those people. Those are people.
They moved. I think of a guy like Larry Osterman, right? Like, he did 30-plus years in the Windows team, and he finally got uncomfortable enough that he moved to a different team. But, you know, and he said as much himself. Yeah. It's like, it got to a place where I wasn't working on stuff I wanted to work on, and I wanted to work on more stuff. So I went somewhere I could work on stuff I wanted to work on.
Yeah, there you go. So that's
the attitude of someone whose bills are paid and just wants to work.
Yeah, so the part of the Windows that he would have worked in was, like, Windows. The Insider program is this thing over on the side. It's like... It's like watching a community play. Like, it's cute and it's funny, but, like, it's not, you know, it's not a high quality production. It's just, you know, it is what it is. And that's too bad, because the initial promise and the initial reality of the Insider program when they created it back in, you know, October, whatever year that was, 2014, it was part of the engineering process. And that was the fun bit. We got to see how they made the sausage. It was interesting. We could be part of the, you know, feel like you're part of the process. Your feedback matters. It will go into the product. At the time, it was rings, not channels, but you had specific jobs that you could do.
And a role.
And you chose that and did. Yeah, exactly. And you felt like you were part of something. Today, it's just, you can go and look at the feedback.
You brought it up. A personality like Donna Sarkar was great at building community, is still great at building community. She's doing it elsewhere now. And so it had a community vibe. But I don't know that the leadership on the Windows side ever looked at it like that. Like, is this a beta test crew? Is this not an alternative to MVPs?
The
marketing arm.
The cynical view is that Microsoft allegedly and infamously fired all of their internal testers, and we're going to bring in people from the outside, the Insider program, to do that testing for us for free. Right. You know, we save millions of dollars a year. You know, I don't know. That might be apocryphal. I don't know.
Hey, everybody. Leo Laporte here. I am the founder and one of the hosts at the Twit Podcast Network. I want to talk to you a little bit about what we do here at Twit, because I think it's unique. And I think for anybody who is bringing a product or a service to a tech audience, you need to know about what we do here at Twit. We've built an amazing audience of engaged, intelligent, affluent listeners who listen to us and trust us when we recommend a product. Our mission statement as Twit is to build a highly engaged community of tech enthusiasts. Wait, already your ears should be perking up at that, because highly engaged is good for you. Tech enthusiasts, if that's who you're looking for, this is the place. We do it by offering them the knowledge they need to understand and use technology in today's world. And I hear from our audience all the time, part of that knowledge comes from our advertisers. We are very careful. We pick advertisers with great products, great services, with integrity, and introduce them to our audience with authenticity and genuine enthusiasm. And that makes our Host Red ads different from anything else you can buy. We are literally bringing you to the attention of our audience and giving you a big, fat endorsement. We like to create partnerships with trusted brands, brands who are in it for the long run, long-term partners that want to grow with us. And we have so many great success stories. Tim Broom, who founded IT Pro TV in 2013, started advertising with us on day one, has been with us ever since. He said, quote, "We would not be where we are today without the Twit Network." I think the proof is in the pudding. Advertisers like IT Pro TV and Audible that have been with us for more than 10 years, they stick around because their ads work. And honestly, isn't that why you're buying advertising? You get a lot with Twit. We have a very full service attitude. We almost think of it as kind of artisanal advertising, boutique advertising. You'll get a full service continuity team. People who are on the phone with you, who are in touch with you, who support you with everything from copywriting to graphic design. So you are not alone in this. We embed our ads into the shows. They're not added later. They're part of the shows. In fact, often they're such a part of our shows that our other hosts will chime in on the ad saying, yeah, I love that. Or just the other day, one of our hosts said, man, I really got to buy that. That's an additional benefit to you because you're hearing people our audience trusts saying, yeah, that sounds great. We deliver, always over deliver on impressions. So you know you're going to get the impressions you expect. The ads are unique every time. We don't pre-record them and roll them in. We are genuinely doing those ads in the middle of the show. We'll give you great onboarding services. Ad tech with PodSites, that's free for direct clients, gives you a lot of reporting, gives you a great idea of how well your ads are working. You'll get courtesy commercials. You actually can take our ads and share them across social media and landing pages. That really extends the reach. There are other free goodies too, including mentions in our weekly newsletter that's sent to thousands of fans, engaged fans who really want to see this stuff. We give you bonus ads and social media promotion too. So if you want to be a long-term partner, introduce your product to a savvy, engaged tech audience. Visit twit.tv/advertise. Check out those testimonials. Mark McCrary is the CEO of Authentic. You probably know him, one of the biggest original podcast advertising companies. We've been with him for 16 years. Mark said the feedback from many advertisers over 16 years across a range of product categories, everything from razors to computers, is that if ads and podcasts are going to work for a brand, they're going to work on Twitch shows. I'm very proud of what we do because it's honest, it's got integrity, it's authentic, and it really is a great introduction to our audience of your brand. Our listeners are smart, they're engaged, they're tech savvy, they're dedicated to our network, and that's one of the reasons we only work with high integrity partners that we've personally and thoroughly vetted. I have absolute approval on everybody. If you've got a great product, I want to hear from you. Elevate your brand by reaching out today at advertise@twit.tv. Break out of the advertising norm. Grow your brand with host-read ads on twit.tv. Visit twit.tv/advertise for more details, or you can email us advertise@twit.tv if you're ready to launch your campaign now. I can't wait to see your product. So give us a ring. We have only about 20 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, we can skip. Oh, yeah. So by the way, I should say, When I first did the notes,
as I enjoy you two.
No, we could just jump right to the back. So
there's a lot.
I put in news from this week. Honestly, none of it is important. Let me just make sure.
We can get up the highlights from the week.
You know. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I would say most of this is not super important. I did this part first, and I said this is kind of weak. And then I said, wait, it's the end of the year. Let's do an end of the year recap, and that was more interesting.
Yeah.
So let's go through some of the highlights, especially since Richard's here. We should let him touch on some of these things, I think. I'm just curious because you have your experience and perspective. I have mine, and I'm just curious where you are with certain things. So, for example, I got a surprise email from Microsoft in the past week that was literally in the title said, this is about HoloLens 2 Momentum. Now, Momentum is a word for me that goes back in time. And Microsoft back in the day, when they were on a three-year release cycle, would release a new version of Windows or Office or whatever it was big. And that was all they talked about. And then next year, they would talk about Momentum. And the year after that, they would talk about the one that was coming next. I always hated that Momentum year because Momentum is nonsense.
Right.
And so I was with a coworker and we were going between meetings at some Microsoft trade show. I don't remember what. So we had all these back-to-back meetings. So we're getting tired. It's the end of the day. And I'm sitting there with our laptops and I leaned into him and I said, guy says Momentum, I'm going to close my laptop and I'm going to beat him to death with it. And so we went into the meeting. The guy said, oh, Paul, I'm really glad to see you. I said, we're here today to talk about Windows Server Momentum. And Keith, this guy and I both just looked at each other, just burst out laughing. This guy is like, what the hell's going on? And it was just like, I just couldn't take it. So anyway, here we are. It's 2022. This is literally probably 20 years later. And HoloLens 2 Momentum. So, Laurent, the guy who writes on news, wrote about it. But the thing that was interesting about it is they addressed an issue which has come up again and again, which is HoloLens 2 came out a long time ago. And HoloLens 2 was a significant update. Was it that recently? It was,
2019.
Okay.
It was, admittedly, it was in the before times,
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Because I actually was there. They announced it in Barcelona. So it was a significant update, but it was also, it had been, there was going to be another HoloLens 2, and this was going to be HoloLens. They kind of pushed it back to get a better HoloLens 2. And it looks like they're doing the same thing with HoloLens 3. And what they said about it was, we're still thinking about this, but we're not going to just release something. We're not going to do a half step. Like, for there to be a new HoloLens, it has to be meaningful. I think they're doing a little bit of treading water here, because I believe that most of the HoloLens team at one point just left. A lot of them went to Meta, right, to work on that stuff. Mm-hmm. Alex Kipman, of course, we know left this year. Yeah. What's your thoughts on HoloLens? Does HoloLens have a future? I mean, what do you think is the story here for HoloLens?
I got a couple of things to think about. First is your cadence is based on hardware, ultimately. You're pushing the limits of what hardware is possible to do, so Moore's law matters, which means realistically you could build a new device roughly every 2 years because you have a new set of hardware.
Do you really want a bunch of different versions of this hardware out in the world, different capabilities, and now developers have to deal with that? I mean,
and hopefully the code just moves forward, but you know that that's part of the problem. I think the bigger one, and they hint at this but don't say it outright, is the U.S. Army derailed them. They got enamored of that U.S. Army future soldier contract. The Army made a huge raft of demands. They hijacked the HoloLens 3 development plan to fulfill that, and then got canceled.
Yeah. I wonder if there wasn't such a huge emphasis. I'd have to look at the timing. I'm not sure about this, but it wouldn't be surprising to me if this coincided with what was happening with Jedi, where they thought, man, we're going to lose big here. We need this win. Like, we need some... to show somehow we're still involved with government. This is big. I know Army is military, but you know, it's like a federal thing. And
More importantly, and I don't want Amazon to win this or anybody else.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And the military demands for a device like that have a lot less to do with new features and more to do with things like durability. Right? It's got to be able to survive a soldier. Yep. So
this is like medical equipment. It has to just work.
And be bomb-proof, right? Yep. The rule is, you know, the line that surgeons use is, I left a private in a room with two steel balls and he lost one and broke the other, right? So you've got to be able to make it robust enough to function in those conditions. And they do that. Like, you look at how durable military equipment is. It's extraordinary. I think if you haven't worked in that space before, and I did some contracting and stuff with a few different, their focus is very different. The mission is very powerful. So I think a person like Alex Kipman was deeply affected by that and pushed hard to pour all
the guy who, as I said, was standing in an aquarium is now making a special built item for the military, which is not exactly the same thing. I almost feel like the company that wants to make that, what they should have done is, like, gone to a subcontractor or something to just do this. Like, this this becomes company's business. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. To solve that particular problem. And that being said, like, what I'm looking for is who replaces Alex Kipman. Who's the new
lead? Yeah. And there's been nothing on that front.
Well,
how long ago did Alex Kipman leave it?
This summer. Remember. It was only this past summer. Yeah. It's only been a few months. In the end, Microsoft does not reward those that pick up the pieces. They reward the heroes that make new things. And that would be shocking for HoloLens, but certainly not unprecedented.
So what you just said, by the way, if you don't mind if I just pause on that for a second, super important, because you're absolutely correct. And this is how, we talk about Windows 11 fit and finish and the archaeological dig of new features, UIs and all that stuff. No one is going to get rewarded for making Windows 11 UIs consistent across the board. Like, keep or get rid of control panel, but if you keep it, make it look like a modern app, or dig into those UIs. No one gets rewarded for that. That work doesn't occur because what you said, 100%. That's exactly right. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. But across the board.
Except that HoloLens is such a leading edge device, is in an innovative space. Like, you're going to anger some important customers that you worked very hard to cultivate for to experiment with this technology. You have to continue the care and feeding on it.
But I think at some point, though, you need processor upgrade. Forget about features. Just from a general performance, whatever standpoint.
Make the new set of chips, which is stunningly expensive. Like, that was part of the problem. They did have to do custom chips because it was leading edge. You have to make the new set of chips. And the moment there is a chip available and you start down that process, you then have that sense the next chip's just around the corner. Like if we just hold on, we can skip a generation, which is clearly where they are right now.
Yep.
So I do like the term industrial metaverse because I really want a metaverse that has nothing to do with Zuckerberg.
And, you know, he definitely isn't doing that.
Yeah.
He might be doing the steampunk universe metaverse, but it's not.
They'll do that thing where they reach into the commercial space a little bit, but the primary focus here is going to be consumer. And doing the reverse is possible, but I don't think you're going to see like a HoloLens 3 with a bunch of video games or casual apps or whatever. It's purpose built. It's going to be like a vertical business solution.
Yeah, you first need a place to work, then you get a place to play, right? Like new platforms are not built on the play part; they're built on the work part.
Yeah, especially Microsoft. But yeah, for sure. Mm.
But it's one of the reasons you tend to see these platforms succeed is when an enterprise embraces them and makes a 10-year-plus commitment to it.
Yeah.
Once that line gets crossed, it's going to keep going along one way or the other. And, Microsoft talking about 300,000 HoloLenses. I mean, that's not as ditchable as some other stacks. That's a fair number of customers. The question is who owns them and how much are they spending and what else do they buy from you? Because the other part they don't talk about at all.
Yeah, I was going to say
the Azure IoT cost of HoloLens. Yeah,
exactly. Per month per user. So that's exactly right. A lot of people hear 300,000 and think, what are you talking about? That's not a $1 billion business. Like, hold on a second. No one picks up a HoloLens is done. There's the custom software development that goes on top of it and those monthly fees per user that go on top of that. Yeah. And they say
an 8-hour day use of HoloLens is $1,000 a month in Azure IoT.
See, and you thought Netflix was getting expensive, you know?
Until I see a leader for the HoloLens team that's going to do the keynote it's nothing,
it's standing still.
It's stuck.
But you don't think that the rumor that they had killed HoloLens 3 and that everybody was getting moved off the team,
There were rumors about this for the previous two gens, right? So the HoloLens 2 that came out is what internally would have been like HoloLens 3 initially. They kind of killed the midterm one. I think there's all kinds of reasons to do things. We could blame the headwinds, you know, like Raspberry Pi just came out today or this week and said, look, we're not going to have a product next year. Next year is going to be building back. We're not doing Raspberry Pi 5 until 2024. It's like, yikes. You know, Microsoft, you could make the same it's not the same argument, but you could see that Microsoft doing the same thing with HoloLens because the existing product does work for what's out there in the world. And they to do something new, it has to be significant, right? It can't.
They have missed the window. Like another way to read this announcement is we're waiting for the next chipset rev.
Right. Really? That's right.
Because we've already missed the window. If we were going to hit the previous chipset rev, it'd be in your hands right now, and it's not. So we got to wait for the next chipset.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
I could tell Paul wants to talk about John Carmack.
I just want to mention.
You read that great book all about the early days.
So John Carmack is a god. I just want to be clear. He's a god. And this was a guy, I think when I think about him and like what he accomplished, right? This is a guy who took like the most pathetic PC hardware in the world in the early 1990s and let it run real-time games in 3D. In ways that were better than Amigas could even dream of, you know, like it's impossible. And so this guy does what he does over the many years, all the game engines and everything, builds a career out of being like the best programmer in the world, and then gets to Meta and runs into a brick wall. And it's fascinating 8 years after the fact for him to finally kind of lash out at these people and say, look, you may still come out on top, but my God, like he said, I find it offensive. How inefficient this company is. It offends me.
Oh, yeah. And he claimed he was quoted out of context, but then I read the original post on Facebook.
No,
he wasn't quoted out of context.
I think he tried to tone it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. The context is I didn't want you to know what I really meant. I was trying, you know.
He sounded pretty unhappy. He says, I'm still bullish on VR. I'm just not happy about how it's run at Microsoft.
You know, he left Bethesda.
I'm sorry. Microsoft at Meta? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. He worked at, co-founded id Software. They sold the company to Bethesda. Bethesda, he said, look, VR is the next big thing. This is where we're going. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm not sure I would have agreed with that either. But then again, this guy who was right about everything, maybe you've put some resources behind this. Like maybe do this too, you know? They just said no, and he left. Yeah, I would take him seriously. Yeah. Exactly. He's not Chicken Little. You know, he knows what he's talking about. And, he might have been ahead of the game, so to speak. But I feel like Meta, if they had also listened to him, might be in a better place today with VR than they are, you know? So it's just kind of interesting. Yeah. There's a fascinating interview with John Carmack that came out this year on YouTube. I don't really like the guy who interviewed him per se, but it's a multi-hour thing. It's crazy. It's amazing to listen to. And I've listened to it twice. And one of the things that he says that I love and I would love to happen, because I know right now he's going to go work on AI. This is his new big thing. But I think the guy asked him some question along the lines of, what do you want to do next? Or what do you see in the future? Or have you ever considered this? And one of the things he said was, he goes, one of the things I've never done is general purpose operating system development. He goes, I got to tell you, I'm really interested in it. And I might look at that sometime in the future. It would be fascinating to see a guy like John Carmack, who has done so much to make woefully inadequate chips outperform what anyone could have thought was possible, apply that knowledge and learning to, Mac OS or Windows or whatever it might be, Linux probably. My God, like what could he do?
Yeah.
He's not done.
It's also possible, Paul, and I know you're in love with Mr. Carmack, that he's a little over the hill.
I'm not listening.
And that all of the amazing and, frankly, very clever tricks he used to get incredible performance out of low-end hardware were in his youth. And
so if you're trying to suggest that he is the... Let's see if I can pull this out of my butt. Steve Wozniak of gaming. I will say no, sir. He is not.
Well, remember, of course, Woz was famous for his low level optimizations. Yep. So was Bill Gates
on the Apple II.
On the Apple II. So once, was Bill Gates.
That's right. But yes, no, for sure.
When you're a youngin, maybe have more energy for that kind of stuff.
But he did it so consistently over such a long period of time.
No, he's a brilliant programmer. I don't know how good he is still. I mean, there are plenty of guys my age who are very, very good. But
did you ever look at Armadillo Aerospace?
I did not.
Yeah.
That was him.
Is that a game? Right. Okay.
No.
That's his space program.
Oh.
His space program. Yeah.
Is he launching armadillos into space?
You misunderstand. No. He lives in Texas, thus the name.
Yes. I imagined as much. Yeah. No, which is not to say he's not vigorous, smart, and creative. It just means he may not, the thing that you cherish him for, his amazing ability to code deep to the hardware to get it to do crazy 3D stuff it wasn't designed for.
I will tell you, Leo,
may not be even what he's doing these days.
Virtual gloves and challenge you to a duel.
And it's certainly not needed, I would imagine. I mean,
yeah.
Okay. The Quest Pro runs on... It doesn't have a tether. It runs on battery. It runs in the processor built in. And it's quite fast and no latency.
The way he described that was he said, this was the product we all always envisioned. We should have gotten here years earlier. Mm-hmm. That was his
Could issue. Could be.
Yeah. Okay. My question is sitting right over there. My problem is, I went back after reading Carmack's thing. I went and put my Quest 2 back on. And the only thing you actually want to do with that is beat Saber, right?
This is kind of the problem.
That's the game.
To be honest. And by the way, he was talking about VR in this post, not AR. Mm-hmm, yeah. And somebody
I gotta tell you though,
on MacBreak Weekly, I think, or maybe on Twitter. No, it was on Twitter. I think it was maybe Jason Heiner said, it might be that he wants to go far ahead in VR, and that Microsoft. Quite, I think, rightly is committed to AR. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that may be.
I think AR makes more sense for Microsoft and what they're trying to do, right? Yeah. I mean, I think that does make sense.
Yeah.
I just think, years ago, remember when Google Cardboard was a thing? Remember that little VR thing was made out of cardboard?
Yes.
So I got this thing and you put your phone in it, it would heat up and burn out and you'd have to take it out, but you would do this for a little while. And at the time, what you could do is actually, this is like the Google Maps version of before Doom or before Wolfenstein of you would have like a dungeon crawler. And the way it would work is you would go down a hallway, but it wouldn't be like the smooth animation like, you know, Carmack created. It would be like a gunk, gunk, gunk. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd go down mm-hmm. the little steps. So you would get on Street View with this thing, and I put it in a position in Paris. I know Paris really well. And I spent hours on the couch walking around Paris, one little, you know, step at a time. Now, mm-hmm. it's not totally immersive, and it's not, you know, whatever, but it was semi-magical. It was kind of incredible, even in that really kind of basic state. And I do feel like there's I'll call it a VR, but maybe a VR, AR solution where you are home and get to experience a travel situation or a situation where imagine like you're, I always use the cafe experience. You're sitting in a cafe, you've got that 360 degree sound through the thing. Glasses are clinking, people are talking, music is playing, rain is falling, whatever it is. It's like an ASMR type of experience. And so if someone handed you a cup of coffee, you would almost be there. Like you would mm-hmm. almost be there. And there are all kinds of those experiences. You can have minor versions of these on YouTube. You can ride a train through Siberia, or someone just walks through the streets of some city and it's like you're there. I do feel like there are armchair travelers who could benefit from this technology in ways that I think are really compelling, or even people who are actual travelers where it's not just a pandemic. You just can't travel all the time. And you're like, I wish I was in Paris tonight. I just keep using that example. And you have this experience. And I do feel like that's something that can happen. You know, that it's, yeah. I'm not, is it worth a $300 or $500 headset or what, you know, I don't know, but I have still a buddy feel like who's there's something there.
A top tier game developer who's now retired, and he did work on VR games at the time. And the whole point he came to was, look, there's a big difference between the 3-inch experience and the 3-foot experience. When you're running in Call of Duty, you're running at about 30 miles an hour because otherwise the game would be sure. boring. If I put that up to 3 inches away from your face, you are instantly nauseated.
That's exactly why does, right.
Why does Beat Laser work? Because you don't move in Beat Laser. Yeah. Your feet are stuck in place. Like all of the movement systems in VR are problematic. And it's you need to design very different games.
Your brain loses it because it can't see your feet or something, and whatever that is.
You're missing your references, and and your equilibrium system gets annoyed with you from the motion that it's seeing, and you kick into seasickness mode. It's like, all right, first step, everyone out of the pool.
Yeah, I experienced this maybe it was an early Oculus. It was an early VR system of this era, you know, and it was probably like an Unreal Engine type of thing, but it was, you know, you just walked around a landscape. You weren't even shooting anything. It was like you were in a Call of Duty or a Quake type game. And I had to pull it off. It made me sick to my stomach. It was amazing on the one, for 1 second, like, holy, oh, you're like, oh, I think I'm gonna, you know, like it was excellent, but terrible, right? Which is, so many things in life, I guess.
It's very challenging. And until you have enough hardware, you've got the old problem, right? The amount of money it's going to take to build that game to make it good, you're never going to make back with the number of headsets that exist. And you're never going to sell the headsets that you have a game that good.
Yeah.
You're stuck in the trap.
Yep. Interesting. Well, I'm going to let Meta, you know, throw billions of dollars at it and.
Well, they already have, and now it looks like Zuck's going to lose his job over it. You know, thought Elon burned a lot of money with $50 billion on Twitter, but Facebook was a $1 trillion company. Yes,
it's kind of amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
The thing I don't get about that is
$1 billion. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's got to be one of the most profitable companies in the world. Just do that.
Yeah.
Why do you have to do? Here's an idea: make the service better. You know, like, I mean, it's weird. Like, it's weird to me that wasn't enough.
Well, when Apple started doing the ID block and so forth, like, their days are clearly numbered. Their business of doing ultra-targeted advertising was already numbered. Right. And rather than find new ways to pursue that business, which ultimately was never Zuck's interest in the first place, this was Sandberg. Sandberg invented the ad business, and she left. So he decided to pivot and burn through a tremendous amount of value, such it is.
Like, I think he's spent.
You're not a happy person.
I feel like that guy feels like he doesn't. I feel like he's trying to prove something. Like, in other words, there are all these doubters that think I didn't create this thing and I'm not smart and I didn't do this and I'm gonna show them. And I feel like this is what comes out of something like that. It's just. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they've moved the needle forward enough for this. Well, they definitely haven't to have this matter in a mainstream way. It's just not. He's and the positive. Folks I this know, is the future.
The folks I know that are senior dev types who got recruited into Meta weren't going there to help Zuckerberg succeed. They said, this metaverse thing's going to be something someday. This guy's spending a bucket load of money on it. I'll put my ear in and then go make something else.
Interesting. How do you feel about Don Box, by the way?
Well, I mean, I would put him in that group.
Yeah.
That guy's worked on a lot of product. He is not an unintelligent person. He sees potential opportunity space.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to pursue that, but he also knows when to move, right? Like, you know, wait till you see him pop back out again. Then you'll know more.
Yeah. That's what I'm curious about. Yeah. How long he lasts.
Let's do the back of the book. What do you say?
Yeah. Yes. So we've been talking a lot about Mastodon lately. I think they picked up about a couple million people since this Twitter Elon Musk stuff started happening. Somebody on Mastodon, I should just find it. I linked to it. So Will Oramus,
yes. He's good.
So he has I was just writing something about Mastodon. It was kind of like the pros and cons. I haven't published yet, but one of the cons is compared to Twitter by default anyway, it's a little quiet, right? So I've been on Twitter for, 15 years, a long, long time, whatever it is. And of course you build up, you follow more people follow you, like turns into this big conversation space. And when you start on Mastodon, it's kind of like, there's 5 or 6 or 20 or 100 people. It's like, it's smaller, you know? And so there's a site and a service called movetodon.org, right? Which helps you find your Twitter friends on Mastodon and it helps you follow more people. So I followed a bunch of people I am following on Twitter. And just in the day since I've done it, Mastodon went from being a very sleepy kind of a thing, which super civil and nice people and all that, but to more of what I was looking for, right?
Yeah,
and
a lot
I
think of these that's people the, moved over. Unfortunately, yeah. Elon now is blocking people linking their Mastodon account. But this gives you a good list. And these are all people I follow on Twitter that I don't yet follow on Mastodon. So I'm going to click that follow all button because that's a great thing.
No, it made a huge difference for me. Huge difference. And I went down the list and just looked at like I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yep.
Everybody's here. Everything. So everybody's here now.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. It was excellent. So that's a neat little tip that I didn't make, but that, you know, makes Mastodon more usable and more of a better experience when you are trying to leave Twitter.
There are quite a few of these, but this is a good one. Movetodon.org, mostly because it ranks it by activity. So the more active.
There's two ways. So you can rank it two different ways. You can rank it by activity, but you can also rank it by the amount of time they've been on Mastodon.
Yeah.
And one of the people I follow has been on Mastodon for years. I didn't even know it was around.
Yeah.
Like how long has it been a thing? Like this, I don't remember the number, but it was a really long time.
14, something like that. We've had a Mastodon. Yeah. You never asked, but we've had one since 2019, but it's okay.
You've mentioned. Okay.
I've mentioned it a lot. Nobody wanted to go to Twitter. I mean, Twitter.
You would say Mastodon. Well, listen, you in some ways were ahead of the game on this. And I think you have I'm not going to call it contrarian. I don't mean it that way, but you have like an open perspective, like there's this thing over here that's proprietary, but here's this thing that's open.
Yeah, I prefer
let's go
open.
In that direction. You're on the right side of history. I think you're
open. And you're it is a case if you go to an instance that there are a lot of people following stuff. Your federated timeline should be moving pretty quick. And this is the advanced interface. So we're Twit Social. You can't join unless you listen to Twit because I don't want it to be overrun by refugees. So twit.social and just say something like,
so you actually have stuff happening in real time.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting this before.
Yeah. Well, the first piece of advice is to open your settings and go to the advanced web interface. Cause that right there will make a big difference. That's when you get they have a slow mode if it's too much for you. And the other thing I would suggest is follow hashtags. So if you're curious about, you know, Windows 11, you can actually follow settings. You can actually follow hashtags. This is kind of like a TweetDeck style setup, but you can see I have a number of hashtags over here on the right that I'm following, including breaking news. And that's when you will, you know, you start to get a lot of information. Oh, there's Richard Campbell, I see, in my notifications. So
I must be clicking the right click or something like that. There he is. He followed me. Oh,
there you go.
Richard Campbell. He's at Mastodon.to Social as Rich Campbell, at Rich Campbell. So I've been following you, unbeknownst to you, all this time.
I'm going to boost the hell out of you.
I like boosting and tooting myself instead of retweeting and tweeting.
Yeah,
I like the boosting and the tooting. What else? What else do you want to pick?
Yeah, so I usually do. I often do an app pick. I would just say, looking back over the year, the top app picks of the year, and these are all based on behavioral changes for me, which I think are important, right? So moving to the Brave browser was a big deal for me and reinforced nicely by the two-month period where I went back to using Microsoft Edge for the purposes of the book. What a great reminder why Brave is so great. Notion, which we replaced OneNote. We did have some problems today. I'm hoping these
first time, though. I mean, it's been pretty reliable.
Literally the only problem, yeah. It just kind of happened. There's an app called Image Glass, which is dramatically better than the thing that's built into Windows. I love it. I put it on
the thing that does what? Image Glass. What is it?
It's just image viewing. And here's the thing. So it does two things. So the way I have it set up is I have it always run full screen. You hit Escape just to get rid of it. So in other words, you double click on an image, comes up full screen. You press T. I have it with toolbar off, so it's just literally image view. And then Escape to get rid of it. But one of the great things it does is I use Photoshop Elements, which doesn't support a lot of these like web-based image formats, like WebP. So Image Glass opens it, and you can do like Alt-F, Save As, and just save it as a ping, and then bring it into Photoshop. It's great. It's become part of my workflow. Like, it's a wonderful application, free. And then Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, which I know sounds a little goofy, but you got to remember, I was stuck on a 4-year-old version of Call of Duty, because I found the last two games to be completely unplayable because of latency lag issues. And they fixed all that with this latest game. And I'm finally on a modern version of Call of Duty. That's actually a big deal for me. So that's a good one, too. So nice. Those are the four biggest ones, I would say, of the year.
Yes.
So this was not as good of a term as the one we had last week. Remember, we had contronym as the word
Loved
last
that.
Week.
This
week it's more of a term or a phrase. Overwhelm freeze. It's when you have too much to do and you freak out or stress out so much you can't get anything done. The only thing that's I don't like the term. I think I wish there was a better term for it. But the thing that's interesting about this to me, I love this kind of human behavior thing, is that this is actually based on the way that we're wired. So back in the day, if you were running through the woods or something and some saber-toothed tiger jumped out in front of you, there was nothing. You didn't have a weapon. There was nothing. That's what your senses got overloaded, and you rolled up into a ball and you hoped that it didn't kill you. Like, that's literally what that comes out of. It's literally the same exact thing happening in your body. You're so stressed because you have so much work to do or whatever it is going on in your life that you literally stop functioning. So instead of it's become impossible for you to chip away at little parts of the things you got to do. You're just so overwhelmed that you just stop. And I find myself doing that a lot. But of course, I have OCD and ADHD issues. But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. And then finally, so last week we did the Twit Holiday Special, which was excellent. And I asked my wife if she would make a holiday cocktail pick, which I had a couple of during the show. And this is, it's called a Winter Warmer. So this is kind of a cocktail pick, I guess. So it's equal parts apple whiskey and cranberry juice, a few shakes of ginger bitters. And the interesting part about this drink is that you warm it on the stovetop, or in the microwave, she's a stovetop, but just to above room temperature. You don't make it hot like tea or coffee, because if you do, it burns off the alcohol. And you serve it warm with like a cinnamon stick. Or
it's like mulled cider, but it's really mulled apple whiskey. Yeah.
It's mulled cider with alcohol. Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
It's fantastic. And there's a neat little, you can see it on screen, but you can make a batch of this and keep it in a crock pot. So if you're at a party, you can kind of ladle it out and it will always
keep the lid on, though. Well, actually, right. If the alcohol evaporates, the lid's not going to help you.
Yeah, that's true. No, but you just make sure it's on low enough of a temp. Yeah. And it
don't boil off the
liquor. So the key here is you got to practice with the temperature, which means you have to make a lot of it, and you have to keep testing it. So that's what
Richard,
the holidays are all about.
The idea of apple whiskey make you throw up in your mouth a little bit?
Sacrilegious? Funny, I was laughing because this is almost a ringer for the cocktail my wife made for our holiday party, which was Calvados and whiskey
with
maple syrup in
Calvados.
It.
Calvados.
That's the original Apple liqueur.
Is from northern, or what do you call it, the northern part of France. Well, it's from the northern part of France, Normandy or whatever, but Calvados is huge up there.
Yeah, I think a lot of apples up there,
Yeah, but they also have Calvados-like drinks that are liqueurs made from other, like from pear or...
Great ciders, actually, in Normandy.
It's apple country,
Calvados.
Right?
Yep, Calvados is fantastic.
Richard, why don't you recommend your favorite brown liquor for the season?
Right.
You know, these days, because you're being a little more cost-conservative, it's I point folks at Angel's Envy.
Yeah. I just mentioned that. That's my favorite cheap brown liquor. It's not that cheap.
Yeah.
But it's not, what is it?
It's not $100 a
bottle. Undlachbungu that you recommended.
Yeah, close.
Abalurabunda. Abalurabunda, baby. Air.
Yeah.
When, drink on air.
When Aunt Pruitt joined us, yeah, because it's cask strength, right? When Aunt Pruitt joined us, I got him a bottle of Abalurabunda.
Oh, speaking of which,
nice.
There's a new container. Abalur is, the packaging is completely different now. So that cylinder comes in, they've completely restyled it. I almost didn't recognize it.
But but you turned me on to cask strength.
Yeah. And once you know, you know.
Oh, baby. Well, all somebody's got to tell you is they water everything else down. It's like, well, I don't want that. What's the unwatered down version?
You're probably going to water it down, right? Yeah. I mean,
no, I'm going to put a drop of water to
to
open up the aroma.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to toss
All right, so if you're a diehard, do you actually have does anyone have an eyedropper they use specifically for this purpose?
No, that's pretty. That's hardcore,
right?
I do have the round ice balls, so that's another way to go, right?
That's always fun.
Yeah I like. Yeah, those.
I had somebody give me the kit with the little glass rod to put a couple of drops.
You go like this, and
there you go. That works too. Yeah, that works.
This is the best lore ever, and we've got to get Richard on sometime and just talk about brown liquors for a while. But I think you gave us
a very long time.
Two of the biggest tips that I remember from the last time I talked to you: Angel's Envy, amazing, and Abalurabunda or whatever that is. And
I do sort my whiskeys into tiers. So if you're a novice drinker, you're not sure you like whiskey, I have a few that are very drinkable.
Give us one that's very drinkable.
Well, by the way, you have to go down one level from that, because there are the whiskeys you buy to put in cocktails.
Yeah.
And then we go up.
And then there's peanut butter whiskey at the very bottom.
Somebody gave me a bottle of butter tart vodka.
Oh, God, no.
It's not a good idea.
No. Was this someone who did not like you?
Apparently.
Butter tart vodka.
Butter tart vodka. Oh. Yeah,
what is your starter? What is your starter? Not that we want to encourage people to drink or anything, but it is the holidays,
per se.
Right, and so really you're talking about a whiskey that doesn't have a whole lot of heat. It just sort of is smooth and easy to drink. So something like a Dalmore 12. The Macallan 12, both very, very drinkable space sides, aged in sherry casks, so they take a lot of the rough spots off.
My brother-in-law, Lisa's brother-in-law, Lisa's sister's husband, loves Irish whiskeys, and he's gotten me into Irish whiskeys. They're very good.
The Red Breast, Green Spot.
Red Breast is awesome.
We just went to an Irish whiskey tasting, actually.
Nice. Red Breast has festive holiday bottle that turns into a bird feeder after you've consumed it. So
nice.
Just a little tip.
Just leave a little bit in the bottom for them. You know, they deserve the holidays too.
I have a little Ireland story for you. So we were doing a Donegal Rocks tour in Ireland, and Carl was meeting up with some musician friends of his. So we brought some Angel's Envy with us, as is typical. And so we meet this fellow in an Irish bar, and we're drinking Red Breast 12. And enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And we give him the bottle of Angel's Envy. And he's sipping a Guinness. He's very grateful for the whiskey. He puts it away, but he's sipping the Guinness. And when Carl and I are starting to drinking whiskey, we drink a fair bit of whiskey. And so at some point in the night, he looked at us and like, God bless you, boys. I don't know how you drink the brown stuff like that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, I can't drink it when I'm in a bar. It makes me fight.
Yes.
Wow.
That's
there are different kinds of drunks, you know. Yes. I'm more of the fall asleep in the corner kind.
I love you guys drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think you guys, I love you guys.
Yeah. Leo, you should sit down over here, buddy.
I love you, Paul. Hey, I love doing this show with you, Paul. Thank you, Richard. It was so great to have you.
Great to be here.
Have a wonderful holiday, both of you. Next week we'll have a best of episode. So Paul gets a week off, and then we'll be back January 4th for a whole new season of Windows Weekly. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC on Wednesday, January 4th. You can watch live at live.twit.tv. Chat with us at irc.twit.tv. Of course, if you're a club member, and by the way, not too late to get somebody in the geek in your life, a membership in the club. $7 a month, $84 a year. You can, is that right? Did I do my math right? You can get ad-free versions of all the shows. Get Paul's very special club-only hands-on Windows show. There's a hands-on Mac, untitled Linux show. There's a lot of other extra stuff in the club. Access to the Discord, all of that. $7 a month, but most importantly, it really helps us keep the lights on. And as we head into recession, and as you saw early, if you missed the beginning of the show, before we began the show, we were talking about how podcasters are extraordinarily short-lived. This would be, that's probably due to their impecunious ways.
I mean, I think between the three of us, we're hitting like a couple centuries, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. You don't add them together. Yeah, but anyway.
Okay. I'm not really good at math, but I mean, it seems to me.
Family gonna gather, Paul, for the holidays?
Yes. Yeah. Nice. My daughter's home. Son's coming home soon, and then we got a bunch of family.
4 days left. Richard, what are your plans? You're in Vancouver, one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Sure, we got hit hard with snow this year, which is very unusual.
Nice. You don't have to go to Whistler. You can stay
half
home.
Half a meter of the stuff. So
I don't think they can leave the house. They have like
pretty much. Snow. Yeah. Wow.
So the. But yeah, my girls are coming in. Oh. They've got their own homes now, but they're not up for cooking Christmas dinner yet. So we're coming back here for Christmas dinner.
We're doing. I'm doing an 18 pound brisket for the family on Christmas.
Oh, good call.
Yeah, excellent. It's going to be delicious. Well, I hope you all have a wonderful holiday. All of our wonderful club members, all of our listeners and viewers, and we'll see you right back here in 2023. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Festivus, have a great Kwanzaa, I will have a Happy New Year, and we'll see you all next year. Bye-bye.
Sit down and relax and enjoy.
Relax and enjoy Santa's underpants.
Oh, is that my cue? Oh, wait.
They're plaid this week.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, and I am the host of Hands On Photography here on Twit TV. I know, you got yourself a fancy smartphone, you got yourself a fancy camera, but your pictures are still lacking. Can't quite figure out what the heck shutter speed means? Watch my show, I got you covered. Want to know more about just the ISO and exposure triangle in general? Yeah, I got you covered. Or, if you got all of that down, you want to get into lighting. You know, making things look better by changing the lights around you. I got you covered on that too, so check us out each and every Thursday here on the network. Go to twit.tv/hop and subscribe today.